Hey, it's time for Twit, and boy, do we have a week for you. Mainstream media wants you to think that the WannaCry hack is over, but folks, it's still ongoing. You're going to want to stay tuned to find out what you need to do to protect yourself. Also, we've got news from Amazon and Microsoft about their newest voice assistants. By the way, there's certain words that we can't say in this episode. And of course, in France, they've owned the hackers. It's all coming up on Twit.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for This Week in Tech is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Twit, This Week in Tech, episode 614, recorded May 14, 2017. $46 at the Piggly Wiggly. This episode of This Week in Tech is brought to you by the Ring Video Doorbell. With Ring, you can see and talk to anyone at your door from anywhere in the world using your smartphone. It's like caller ID for your house. Go to ring.com/twit and get up to $150 off a Ring of Security kit. And by Tracker, a coin-sized tracking device that pairs with your smartphone and keeps you from losing your most valued possessions. Visit thetracker.com right now and enter the promo code TWIT to receive a free Tracker Bravo with any purchase. And by NatureBox. Delicious snacks made from high-quality ingredients. Eat well and feel better. Visit naturebox.com/twit to save 50% on your first order. And by Texter. Access the world's most popular magazines anytime, anywhere, using your smartphone or tablet. Try it free for 14 days at texter.com/twit. It's time for Twit This Week in Tech. It's the show where we go through the tech world like your mom going through your laundry looking for the best news to wear. I'm Father Robert Ballister, in for Leo Laporte, who is currently exploring his spiritual side in Colorado. But of course, I'm not going to be by myself. I'm going to need the help of some experts in this wonderful field of technology, starting on my left with Mr. Alex Wilhelm.
Hey. Expert, yes. Though. I wouldn't expert. Go quite so far as expert.
He's known as the Tech Scream. Of course, the editor-in-chief at Crunchbase. Good to see you.
Good to be here.
You know, I've seen you so many times, and I've never actually met you in person.
I've actually done throws to your video clips on the show, like, and next up we got, and then you would come on. I'm like, I really gotta meet that guy.
I just needed to make sure you actually existed.
I am just
a digital artifact.
I am corporeal.
True. Yeah. You are. Okay, fantastic.
See, proof. Oh, yeah,
and next to him, the man poking Alex, is Mr. Roberto Baldwin. He's with Engadget.
Hi.
Roberto, I also have never met you in person. Thank you very much for coming on.
I'm a secretive man. I have a cave that I live in, and I'm not quite sure what I'm doing on the show.
You're here because we need the knowledge, sir.
Oh, yeah. I can tell you all about raccoons, cave things, cars.
Where do you live? Are you in San Francisco?
I live in the city, yeah.
You are. You're also in the city.
Oh, yeah.
So there's three of us in this. I don't think that's ever happened before. Three people from San Francisco on the same Twit panel.
Well, then it's going to be either the coolest and best Twit or the absolute worst over Twit. I can't decide.
Eventually, it'll devolve into us just arguing over the best burrito.
Can we gentrify the show?
No, that's not an argument. That's the best burrito is actually here in Petaluma. It's Roy's.
Oh,
gosh. El Roy's.
That rumble in the background was
the Twit
staff.
We're going to take the audience to El Roy's afterwards. They can decide, but it is the best.
False.
Okay. Someone who will not be arguing about burritos, but giving us quality tech reporter is, Christina Warren, who I want to say is tech journalist icon, but soon will be Microsoft icon. Christina, how much of this can you tell us?
I can share what I'm going to be doing. So my last day at Gizmodo, where I'd worked for almost a year, was on Friday. And after 10 years in tech journalism, I am no longer a tech journalist. I am, for the next week, I'm unemployed. But I'm going to be moving to Seattle. I'm packing up my apartment right now. And I will be a senior content project manager in Microsoft's online learning division working on Microsoft Virtual Academy. So I'm excited.
Oh, congratulations.
Thank you. I
have to ask, we established before the show started that aside from me, everyone here is a millennial.
Wait, yes. No, I'm very old.
Oh, no. Okay. Okay. There's two of us who are millennials. The extreme sides of the panel are millennials. I thought millennials were never unemployed. They were just between gigs.
The phrase is fun-employed, I think, actually.
Fun-employed.
It's that liminal state between bumming off your parents and being able to pay for your own rents. Fantastic.
Yeah, and actually, it's kind of nice. I've only been between gigs once, or fun-employed once, since I did
this organization. And it, I got to say, it was very freeing.
Yeah, I had 3 weeks off in January. I changed jobs, and I ended up with more free time than I expected. And so I got super bored really fast. Like day two, I was like going to the gym twice a day because I had nothing to do, and it was horrible. And then I just left for a couple of weeks.
Yeah, I remember going to the gym twice a day.
So my gap week, I'm moving across the country, so I do not have free time.
So you have to move to Redmond.
Oh yeah, I have to move to Redmond. Yeah, so I'm in Brooklyn, and like the movers and packers are coming on Tuesday, and we fly out on Friday. So
are you not driving? Driving is awesome.
Fun fact for everyone, I don't have a driver's license.
Oh,
so that's going to be really fun for me to figure out in Seattle. Is it going to be like trying to figure out, like, do I get a car? Yes.
If you're on the West Coast, you have to have a car.
That's my husband's going to get a car. The bigger question is, do I, like, and I'm not sure because there is public transit and stuff. So we will figure that out. But I don't know.
Are you going to be in Seattle or are you going to be in Bellevue, Kirkland? Like, where are you going to be?
I don't know.
Because that matters a lot based on the car question.
Exactly. I'm not sure. So we'll have a temporary place to stay for a couple of months, and then we'll figure out the living situation. Well,
yeah. It's not just about transportation. On the East Coast, I know, because I've lived on the East Coast, having a car is difficult just because there's nowhere to put it without paying an exorbitant amount of money. There's parking on the West Coast. We can put our cars places. So I know you don't believe me now, but driving can be an enjoyable experience.
I don't believe you, but I will. But I will give that a thought.
All right, let's go ahead.
Into it.
Let's jump in because we do actually have a rare opportunity to talk about a news story that didn't just break, but is still breaking, and one that, unlike a lot of other tech stories, the non-tech press has picked up and ran with it because it is so big and it's so impactful. Of course, we're talking about WannaCry. Now, there's a couple of things that we know about WannaCry. We know that it was developed from the leaked Eternal Blue that was released by the Shadow Brokers. That was an NSA tool, which, by the way, one of the very first reporters to pick up this story was our very own Kurt Franklin, who is a co-host on This Week in Enterprise Tech. Now, we know that the initial infection was via emailed link or attachment. So this was it looked like a phishing attack. But once infected, a computer would check a domain to see if it responded. It would exploit an SMB vulnerability in some versions of Windows in order to spread laterally. So once you had a computer on a network that was infected, it could infect other vulnerable computers on that network. Then it installed the double Pulsar backdoor, which was interesting because that would stay even if you paid the ransom, because this is cryptoware. Mm-hmm. And of course, it would demand $300 in Bitcoins. Now, we have to wait for the numbers because they're still kind of trickling in, but anecdotally, it looks like we're talking about over 200,000 systems. It's probably going to end up being in the 500,000 systems by the time this thing is done. It seems as if XP is taking the brunt of the attack. 10, as far as we know, is not vulnerable. 8, I think unless you've got one of the very first versions, it's not vulnerable. So we're talking about XP, Vista, and Windows 7. But Windows 7 probably not because it's probably been patched. Now, again, the first impact was hundreds of thousands of systems followed by 150 countries, including Europe, Asia, some of the Americas.
Continents, not countries.
Continents. No. Continents, yes. It shut down manufacturing at Renault in France and Romania, shut down manufacturing at Nissan in England. It also affected, and this was the big one, this is the one that caught people's attention, health services in Britain, which evidently are running Windows XP. And you actually had to have patients who were diverted because systems weren't working. The intake systems weren't working. Now, let's start with that, because that's a good background. Is this, as people are calling it, this is the very first worldwide cyber attack? I mean, the one that people have looked to and said, okay, this is what we were waiting for. It's finally here.
I don't know if I go ahead and say it's the absolute first one, but it certainly meets the scale we've been promised. People say this is going to come. This is going to happen. Eventually, down the pike, it's going to whack you in the face super hard. And this is at least meeting that bill of sale. I mean, there was actually a photo I saw on Twitter on the way up here of a Russian train like control area, and some of their screens were actually just blocked off with the same malware we saw a second ago, and so they couldn't run the trains. I mean, this was global and systemic across our important infrastructure and our life. So I think it meets all thresholds of crisis.
Yeah, Christina, what about it? Is this the digital Pearl Harbor?
I mean, I don't know if it's that. But it could be. I mean, it certainly had the potential to be. I mean, at least the first attack was mitigated, but now we have all of these other variants that are coming out. It's certainly scary. I mean, I think it could be.
Yeah.
Why do they only ask for $300?
It's actually this is very game. Well studied. That's the pain threshold.
Really?
So below $300 and below, people are saying that's less than the time it would take me to fix my system. Above $300, people are saying I'll just go to a backup.
Yeah.
So the $300 is the sweet spot, pain yeah. point, whatever, yeah. that thing. That's that thing. Amazing because, I mean, I was told that all the crypto from this is flowing to three separate wallets total. But, I mean, it can't be that much money in aggregate if it's only $300 per. I heard one of like $30K mm-hmm. in it. But, I mean, to me, the amount of chaos has been caused for this small dollar amount is
right.
really out of whack. Like, what a bit of mischief for, like, some change. I mean, a lot for me personally.
Well, I mean,
like,
if you're just building, if you want to do it for the lulls or you just want for a little bit of cash or, you know, they might be looking at, local laws, like anything above a certain amount would, you know, go from a misdemeanor to a felony or whatever. Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of things. Plus, like you said, the threshold, if you're more likely to get $300 than $5,000.
Right.
Because you're just really? Like, you know what? I'll just go to the bank. I'll get $300. We'll pay it. We just want this off of here.
They've actually done studies about this because this is not the first crypto ransom software we've seen in the wild where, $600, that's too much. People won't pay $600 on the most part unless it compromised a vital system versus
right.
$300, which is, three Bitcoin, or less than a third of a Bitcoin. That's something that people are willing to look at and say, you know what, it's worth me not being annoyed.
I just love it that it's 17.6% of a Bitcoin is fine. 0.5 Bitcoin, way too much. I won't do it.
But regular people don't think in Bitcoin. Well, they just say $300. They're like, you know what? That's less than an Xbox or whatever. I could just pay it and be done with it.
I mean, I've read things before, and I don't know how it works in this case, but I know that in other ransomware attacks, even getting people who are willing to pay the $300, going through the process of buying in Bitcoin and going through that is a challenge in and of itself. And so you wonder, too, like there might be people who are willing to pay $300 but aren't willing to go through the hassle of going through a Bitcoin exchange and signing up for those accounts and connecting things and setting up a wallet and transferring stuff over, so you have to wonder too, like how much potential, why maybe the amounts are less just because depending on who your target is, they might not be willing or able to go through that process.
That all sounds very valid, but the fact that they shut down the NHS for less than the price of a 3-day pass to outside lands, ironic in some ways.
Right.
It's kind of funny to me.
Like, they don't know where it's going to go, though. I mean, they release it into the wild, and they just assume it's going to hit certain computers that are vital.
Yeah. I know. That's so irresponsible. I mean, Robbie made a good point about, like, for the lulls. You can't be that indiscriminate and that awful for the lulls, unless you really have
no. That's really what for the lulls is, though. Plus, if you look at it and you say, okay, what percentage of computers are running Windows 95? What percentage of computers are not patched? And you're just like, you know what? If we just ask for $300, every single hospital, there's a lot of hospitals, that's $300. Every single small mom and pop shop, $300. Every single little place that's still running Windows 95 because A, they can't afford to update their hardware or their software, or B, they're using legacy software that they need for their business. A lot of hospitals have to use old stuff for their business.
Yeah.
It's, people are like, why didn't you patch it? We're like, well, because if they do, it'll break something that's very important to keeping somebody alive somewhere.
There was a great thread on Twitter, I think from a Microsoft employee who works on .NET stuff, and he was kind of talking about how these $15 million like MRI machines are running Windows XP embedded because when the machines were created, that was the most up-to-date and modern embedded system you could use. But the manufacturer might be gone, and in getting a patch and getting things done is very complicated, and there are a lot of things that go into why something can or can't be updated. And it's not simple as to say, we'll just update it because maybe the manufacturer isn't in business or maybe, support has been outsourced out to a lot of different areas. And as you were saying, Robert, like if updating one thing could break a bunch of other things and air gapping and things like that and isolating things on the network is great, but you still need systems that need to talk to one another. It's a really complex problem to solve, especially when you're looking at organizations like the NHS or hospitals in general where funds are cut all the time and they don't have big budgets to have people security as up-to-date as much of a priority as it is. And it becomes very expensive to look at replacing certain systems that are working just because of something else. It's a really, really complicated problem when you start talking about these sorts of very important vital systems, like hospitals. But I think that whoever created this, I mean, that'll be a very interesting thing is to figure out who's behind this, depending on what part of the world they're from, even $300, even $30,000 could be a lot of money to them. Right. And then if this continues to go on and affect more and more users and more people pay up, it could that money, that the value for them could go up too.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the mitigation, because here's a few of the things that we know. We know that it didn't hit the United States as hard as it hit Europe for a couple of reasons. One, we're on weekend, so everything is shut down already. Two, by the time it rolled around to the United States, people knew about the attack, and so the phishing emails were being blocked upstream.
Right.
So that really, really helped. And then, of course, there was the accidental discovery. There's a British researcher. All we know is that he's known as @MalwareTechBlog. He works for an LA-based threat intelligence company, but he lives probably in Southwest England. He was looking at the traffic that the malware was generating, and he noticed that it was beaconing to a domain that did not exist. Mm-hmm. And so he registered the domain, and the attacks abated. If you were already infected, it didn't work. But if the malware tried to install itself on the system and it did receive a ping back from the from that entry, which was WannaCry.com or WannaCry.org, then it wouldn't install itself. It was a kill switch. So yeah, he found that.
By accident,
but it worked. It very much mitigated it. Now, here's the fun part, and I really want to get your input on this, because you've got the non-tech press, and even some of the tech press, CNET, CBS, got caught up in this saying, well, that was a bad attack, wasn't it? And it's as if, oh, it's over. And it's like, no. In fact, this morning, we've had security researchers who have been verifying on Twitter, there is a second variant in the wild, and they removed the kill switch. That will not work anymore.
That took what, 12 hours?
Yeah. I mean, not even that.
If it was that simple to take down, you can correct that mistake. But, I mean, for $11 and some experimentation, points to that guy for saving a lot of people a lot of bother.
Yeah, like, absolutely.
Props. When I read that story, I thought it was almost like a joke. Like, this can't really be what happened. That's amazing. It also shows the power of one person tinkering around the edges, even against a global catastrophe. I like that idea.
Yeah. It was, from what I understand, it was just a standard honeypot. So he had a Windows XP honeypot. He had a tap. He watched the infection traffic, and then he's like, oh, what's this domain? Oh, it's not registered. Let me register it. Oh, wow, that fixed it.
Yeah. I can track it with this tap. I can track the pings coming from all the different IPs, and he's like, oh, well, I fixed it. And of course, everyone can be just like, the person who made the variant's just like, oh, well.
Yeah, let me just take that. It was literally, let me just take out that check.
There we go.
It's not going to check anymore.
Back out in the world.
Well, the story that I read about this particular solution was that when they first did it, they thought they made a mistake and had made it worse. And they were like, oh, no. And they were freaking out. And then it turns out, no, it's the direct opposite. But can you imagine the emotional whiplash you would go through? Like, wow, what's this? I've made it worse. Never mind. I saved the world. Like, I mean, that's a really big 3 minutes. I don't know if I could take that kind of turmoil.
That's an emotional roller coaster.
Yes,
really,
indeed.
That is.
Can we take it?
Unlike Devo, which is not emotional roller coaster, which is bad music.
Sorry. Oh, okay. Pretty we're not going there. No, Devo is good music. It's different. You just can't listen to it every day.
That was just for Robbie. Sorry.
They have the hats, right?
They have the hats. Those are great hats.
We tried to actually buy some Devo hats to wear on the show today, but we couldn't figure out how to get them shipped here fast enough.
We could have 3D printed them for you.
We did not think of that.
Okay. All right. Now, something else about this story that I find kind of interesting. One of, I won't mention which one, but a U.S. ISP decided they were going to protect their clients by blocking the domain. And someone had to reach out to them and say, that's actually the absolute worst thing you could do.
Why would you do that?
I know. Well, because they thought, oh, attack traffic, we'll kill it. And it's like, no. That was the kill signal. You just blocked the kill signal. It's amazing that even some, quote unquote, technically minded people didn't actually read the story. They saw the domain and they said, domain must be bad. It gets added to the blacklist. But that's actually been happening a lot.
That's because no one understands security. Security is so complex. The number of journalists I know who I actually would trust to explain security to me is very few. Like Zach Whitaker from ZDNet and maybe one or two other people. Like Zach's fantastic, but he's almost
Zach's
one
great.
Of a kind. You know, and we have a story of his later on in the rundown. But I do not write about security on purpose because I always feel like a charlatan. And like, I'm always covering up for a lack of personal knowledge. And I feel like that's not abnormal in the field.
Writing for security is scary because it's so easy to get wrong. It's so incredibly easy to get it wrong. I mean, I cover security, but I lean on a lot of senior security experts. I lean a lot on security researchers. You got to call those people. You got to talk to them on the phone. You got to let them walk you through what's going on. Because if you try to write it in a vacuum, which a lot of tech press does for a lot of things, right? Well, I just know. I'm just going to write this thing.
Hey.
With security, you can't do that. You have to talk to people. You have to talk to these researchers. You have to get their knowledge and put it in your article. Because if you don't, you're just spreading a lot of bad information, which is worse.
Yeah. And you have to make sure that you're talking to the right researchers, because sometimes they, you know what I mean? Like there can be, there just like there are kind of, you know, you feel like a charlatan as a journalist, there can be charlatans in the security community too. So it really becomes imperative to know you're talking to the right people, explaining it the right way, being accurate. Like, I mean, I'm glad I don't have to do this anymore. Cause it's easy to get it wrong, you know, and it can be very, bad when you get it wrong. I mean, as you were stating, you know, the fact that people thought, okay, because this first variant, this kill switch was found, oh, well that's over. It's like, no, this is literally just the beginning. And it's easy to get caught up in the rhetoric. What's also bad too, I think, that what makes security difficult is that we have so many stories that are like, oh, this is the worst thing ever. That I think that the general public has a certain sense of malaise and learns to just kind of ignore all the big threats. So that when you have a situation like this, which really could be like the worst thing ever, I don't know how seriously people take it.
Yeah, you know, I always trust the security researchers I know from DEF CON, from Black Hat, the ones that I've known for the years. Yeah. And they are almost never the people that you see in the headlines, because they don't believe in this, I'm going to get it out first. It's, I'm going to get it right, and then I'm going to tell you what's going on. And I love that analysis. But Christina, you brought up the point of the general public. We got to ask, because anytime you get to a general public story, there's always going to be the question, well, whose fault is this? And there's a lot of that. In fact, the New York Times put out an op-ed today essentially saying, Microsoft, this is on you.
Boo.
And I could not disagree more. This is a patch that was put out for most of Windows in March of 2017. They actually released a free patch for Server 2003 and XP, even though they don't have to anymore. Those products are end of life.
They're dead.
They're dead. And they've been warning you
that
it's going to be dead for years.
They stamped up and down on that issue month after month. Get off, get off, get off.
Yeah, but this op-ed says, yes, I know it's end of life. I know that they've been telling us, but doesn't Microsoft have a responsibility to make sure something like this can't happen?
Oh, call on me.
But it's not. I mean, that really kind of goes back to, so the sky is falling. It's got to be someone's fault. It's the nature of the beast. Is what it is. It's hard to point blame. I mean, clearly it's the people who made this. It's the NSA who had this, you know, this exploit, and they were holding on to it. And then their shoddy security allowed it out. But to yell at Microsoft is ridiculous. It's like when you yell at Microsoft because some third party hasn't made it a driver for the newest version of Windows. And you can't yell at the hospitals. You can't yell at these businesses because, like I said, some of them, they don't have a choice. They have to use these legacy systems if you want to get, like you said, an MRI, if you want to get a CT scan, if you want to do all this stuff. So it's a sort of weird nature of the beast. And to have this op-ed that says, well, it's Microsoft's fault, it sort of misses the point. And it really simplifies the issue, which is we have created these systems that you can't update. And there's not really anything you can do to update, because you're talking about 100 machines that are $100,000, $200,000, $300,000. You're not going to update it because you're like, oh, well, we need to put Windows 10 on here.
Right.
You know, but we need to get patients in here. We need to take care of this.
Really importantly, about 45 minutes ago, Snowden tweeted a new Microsoft blog post from their security team, and especially I think Brad Smith, who's on their kind of corporate legal side of things. And the Snowden tweet was, Microsoft officially confirms the NSA developed the flaw that brought down hospitals this weekend. And the Microsoft post actually calls out NSA and what's the actual quote here? Stockpiling of vulnerabilities by governments. And so they're turning this around at kind of a contrary to the New York Times op-ed and saying, look, if you guys stockpile this stuff and you get hacked and it gets released to the wild, this is what happens. Can you stop doing that and work more with us? So then who's really at fault here? Is it the NSA for uncovering things it can use in its job? Is it Microsoft for not supporting software in perpetuity? Is it Times op-ed columns for being all very old, technologically illiterate people? I mean, I don't know exactly where to drop the blame, but I mean, it's definitely not one person, and it's definitely not a simple answer.
Also remember, this is actually a multi-part exploit. So it's at least two discrete parts. The first part is the phishing attack. Mm-hmm. So either attachment or email link that leads to remote code execution. Once it was installed, then it did the second part. The second part was an exploit of the Samba vulnerability in Microsoft Windows networking. So that's the part that was developed by the NSA. That's the part that allows it to move laterally. In the past, when you had a phishing attack, you'd infect one computer, maybe the computer that was authorized to connect to. But this one, will actively search out other vulnerable Samba installations in any given network.
I'm dumb. Can you explain what move laterally means in this context?
Okay, so once you get past the firewall,
sure,
you are all the systems past that firewall are on the same level. And if you can move laterally within that, it means that you've essentially bypassed the firewall for all of those computers.
I see. Okay, so there's one firewall for all the cool stuff. And once you're down there, you can bounce around to different parties as much as you want to.
Right.
Yeah. You affect everything in that network.
Right. Cool. Which is why good enterprise-class security divides things into zones. So it's not as a firewall and then we just assume everyone's good. Mm-hmm. A good network will assume everyone's going to do something stupid, so you firewall off as much inside the network as possible.
So you baby-proof essentially your enterprise tech.
Right.
Oh, well, that seems pretty reasonable. Why didn't we do that here?
Well, because think of who got hit the hardest. Manufacturing and the NHS. Neither of which really have, competent, even though that's mean. I don't really mean that. I'm sorry. If you work there, you are competent, but you don't have the resources. But you don't have a competent IT team. So they don't have the ability to put things in zones. And even if they did, imagine in a hospital, if every time you needed to approve an emergency service, you had to go through five different layers of security.
People would die.
People would die. Right. Yeah. That's not good. Or in a manufacturing plant.
That's not good. Okay.
Yeah. Someone enters in the wrong password and suddenly you shut down the assembly floor. Okay. That's not going to work either. People won't let you do that. I think this is the story that I like. There's a story of inertia here. We do not want to, under any circumstance, change the way that we work. We want the tool to change. But the tool can't change because what they attacked here was human nature.
It's always phishing.
Can we just go ahead and replace all the humans with some better ones? And then I think that'll solve the problem.
Google's
right?
working on that.
Yeah. Well, so is Peter Thiel.
No, my wife works in the hospital. She gets paid a lot of money. I don't want her replaced by her.
I mean, my girlfriend's a doctor, so like, I'm in the same boat, dude.
All right. See?
Okay, all I know is if we're going to be replacing healthcare workers, can we replace them with Filipino artificial intelligence because they work the best?
I don't know how to comment on that and not get in trouble somehow. I think anything I say to that will get me in trouble. So
I'm just waiting for you so I can yell racist.
See, that's exactly why I'm not saying anything.
Say something.
Now, Robbie is cute.
Here's the thing. We're in the second wave. This is by far from over because tomorrow, millions of Americans go back to their workplaces. They're going to be on computers that have been untouched for 3 days. And they are going to log into systems that might have already been compromised. Or they're going to be going through their huge email inbox and go, oh, I'm going to click everything I see. So this is going to spread. And if it's the second variant, which it probably is now, there is no kill switch.
So we're going to be in for a really great ride.
This is going to be a great week.
Thank God I'm traveling.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure none of the airports have
problems.
I'm sure they've all updated their systems.
I think I'm flying
you
now.
Guys, they've got great reliability. I have to fly this week, not to make this about me or anything. But
I told you you should have drove. No one listens to Robbie.
I got back from Malta on Friday, and I have to leave for Europe again tomorrow afternoon. So
that's tough.
I'll just say it was a security thing.
Yeah, that sounds good.
Okay. All right. We're going to get back to this. We've got to move on because, yes, the WannaCry is pretty devastating, but I don't think the tech people would say that this was something that caught us by surprise. We knew something like this was going to happen at some point, right? I mean,
of course.
Yeah, it's a given. It's like the inevitable earthquake of California. Yeah. It's like the inevitable big one. We knew this was coming. We know that tons and tons of legacy systems are out there. We know that some IT departments are not as good as others. And we know that everyone's going to click on those phishing emails.
I like to do them. I have systems in my lab that are virtualized specifically so that I can.
You have to be careful. Did you hear about the one that jumps out of virtuals?
Yes. Okay. But even the machine that the virtual machines are hosted on, that also gets nuked every time.
So okay.
It's an automatic process for me. I basically hit a red button and everything goes back to the way it was.
You are a much better nerd than I am.
No, it's just
you get a little clap
I have
and you
a
see
whole
it.
Lot more gear.
I have no excuse though. All right.
The church provides gear for me.
Whoa.
The Actually, Lutheran Church true. Gave me no gear. I'm just saying.
Catholics are really big in the gear. Well, folks, speaking of gear, this episode of TWiT is brought to you by the Ring Video Doorbell. Now, I know that you've seen this. We've had this on so many shows on the Twit TV network. Yes, it's a doorbell that replaces the device you currently have on your home. Yes, it includes everything that you need to be up and running, including the doorbell itself, the adapter plate, all the little tools to have it up and running in just a few minutes. In fact, I bought this kit before Ring was a sponsor of the network for my father, who lives in Las Vegas. He was able to install it in about 4 minutes and had it up and running, and I was connected. It was very impressive. But it's more than just an electronic doodad. It's more than just something that you can hang outside so people know that you're geeky. This is a security device and a security ecosystem that is paralleled by none. Today, over a million people use the amazing Ring video doorbell to help protect their homes because Ring knows home security. They know that it begins at the front door and it doesn't end there. They're not just providing you a technical solution. They're giving you a solution that kind of takes into account a little bit of human nature. That's why they're extending that same level of security that they provided in the Ring video doorbell to the rest of your home with the Ring floodlight cam. Now, just like Ring's video doorbell, their new floodlight cam is a motion-activated camera and floodlight that connects to your phone. It's got HD video and two-way audio, so it lets you know the moment anyone steps on your property and actually lets you have a two-way conversation with them. You can see and speak to those visitors, even set off alarms right from your phone, no matter where you are in the world. With Ring's floodlight cam, when things go bump in the night, you can bump back and immediately know what it is. Whether you're home or away, the floodlight cam lets you keep an eye on your home. And floodlight cams offer the ultimate home security with high visibility floodlights and a powerful HD camera that puts security in your hands. It was named the Wall Street Journal's Best of CES 2017. I trust my parents with the Ring ecosystem. They've got a Ring video doorbell on the front door. We've got a floodlight cam in the back. And what that allows me to do is, even when my parents are not home, I know if someone's coming up to the front door and peeking through the window, or if someone's trying the door in the back, seeing if maybe it's ajar. It's that that tells me that my parents are secure, because I know if someone's scoping out their place, it gives me a peace of mind and it lets me know that my parents are protected. So here's what we want you to do. We want you to be always home. And with Ring, you can do that. Save up to $150 off a Ring of Security kit when you go to ring.com/twit. That's ring.com/twit. And we thank Ring for their support of This Week in Tech. All right, let's move on because I'm done with fishing and with worms. I want to talk about something happy, shiny, and new, specifically the Amazon Echo. Oh, I'm sorry, the Amazon Echo Show. Oh, by the way, disclaimer here, gentlemen, lady. We do not say the Amazon Voice Assistant trigger word. You can say either Amazon Voice Assistant or Echo, but don't say that other word because
Alex.
What if we just called it like Al?
Is that, it's close enough. That actually might trigger on some system. Because you have to remember, people listen to this show on their Amazon devices. And if we say it, the show interrupts itself, which is awesome.
I decided I don't like them, so now I kind of want to troll all the owners.
Just
out of respect for the network rules.
Now you
want
to say it.
Then some of them change it to computer or to Amazon.
But we have no control over that.
Okay.
I will say that if we say it, the editors have to spend extra time editing things out.
Okay.
Do we like the editors?
We do.
The editors are good. I like the editors. Have they been good recently?
They're the hardest working people at Twit.
They're the only working people at Twit.
I mean...
Oh.
Come on, you walked into that one.
It's true.
Can we even say Wilhelm's name
It's close enough. It's close enough.
If you say my full name with the ander at the end, it probably would be even closer.
Yep.
Sup.
I am nameless.
Okay, so just so you know, those are the ground rules. Okay. Well, let's talk about the new Amazon Echo Show. So we're talking about a 7-inch touchscreen. Front-facing camera, mic, our rear-facing 8-mic array, so you get that wonderful conference phone technology. It's powered by an Intel Atom X5Z8350, Wi-Fi 802.11abgn, that's both 2.4 and 5 gigahertz connected, plus Bluetooth. It's probably going to be some Amazon variant of Bluetooth like they use on their Fire tablets. It works with all current Amazon Voice Assistant skills. And it's going to be available on June 28th for $230. Of course, you get $100 off if you buy a 2-pack.
If you buy it now. Yeah. It is so ugly.
It is ugly. You know, it looks like the 20th anniversary Mac. And that was one of
you know what it really looks like? It looks like a chumby. It looks like a chumby.
You don't know what a chumby is?
I have a better one. You know what it reminds me of? Almost exactly like the 3Com Audrey.
Kind of, yes. It kind of looks like the Audrey. Yes, it does. It looks a little bit like the Audrey, a little bit like a Chumby. It look a little bit like Sony's variant of the Chumby, which was called the Dash. No, it is so ugly. I do not. When the leaks first appeared, which I have a feeling is what forced them to go forward with the announcement. But when the leaks appeared last week, I was like, there's no way this is real. And then Evleaks was like, yeah, here's your product photo. And I was like, okay, so this is what this looks like. Why? Why Amazon? Why? Like,
they made the Fire Phone.
That's the biggest question. Yeah.
Well, the Fire Phone was attractive for, I mean, okay, it wasn't attractive. It looked like any other phone. Like the Echo and the Echo Dot look fairly good. And I even think that the look, the really creepy, you know, camera for your bedroom that I kind of want. I kind of want it because I'm terrible. I'm the worst. I'm the worst type of person. I kind of want the look. But at least those have some sense of design, I suppose, especially when you get the Dot or the Echo in white. I think they're nice looking. This, especially in white, is just terrible. This is one of the ugliest gadgets I've seen in a really long time, and I don't understand how Amazon
put this out. It's just a flat thing.
It's like the worst
digital photo frames that are out there. It's the, you remember when for like 6 months everyone was buying those digital photo frames for their parents?
Yes,
it's one of those. It happens to have a speaker.
It looks like someone 3D printed something that all the parts would fit into, and then gave it to the styling team. Dude. And the styling team's like, "Oh no, we'll just go with that."
That's brutal.
But yes, it's brutal. But man, whose name I can't say because we don't want to trigger the Amazon keyword. It's accurate because this is designed for your home. Like it, you know, the Echo and the Echo Dot are kind of designed, you know, for a bedroom or a kitchen. They're literally being like, oh, put this, you know, and put this everywhere. Make this a centerpiece because you're going to use this to use the Amazon version of FaceTime that no one is actually going to use. And you're going to use this to watch Netflix, even though I bet the lag is significant on that Atom processor. And you're going to use this to, get visualizations for your music, I suppose, which all sounds great. But that means like that makes the screen the center point. So like they really want people to show this off, which makes the ugliness factor that much more egregious.
Yeah, that's what kills it. This is the whole Amazon Voice Assistant ecosystem is a hands-free system. The second you tack a screen on, it's no longer hands-free. You can't roam. You need to be able to see the screen. Can you imagine anyone wanting to watch content on a 7-inch touchscreen that's in the middle of the kitchen?
No.
What if you held it really close to your face? Like, and also,
what's awesome is it's tilted up, and so you get that camera angle that everyone loves, that like above your chin, so you kind of look like you're like a monster.
Oh, yeah, that's awesome.
If you really want this, buy yourself a $50 Amazon Fire tablet, 3D print a stand, and there you go. It's a show.
And Twit will 3D print the stand for you.
And we will 3D print the stand. We'll make it look exactly on the wall like the show.
Yeah, it's
people in the chat are comparing this to the iMac, you know, that was that they had that was like on the stand. I think that is mean. I think that was the best looking iMac that was ever created. The one that the G4 iMac that was like on the Lancet.
No, this is way worse than this.
That was a beautiful design.
That was distinctive. This is just sort of meh.
Yeah.
At least the Echo, it had that cool look. It's like, I've never seen anything like this. Okay.
And the Dot's like unobtrusive. Yeah, it's just nice little puck. You can put it anywhere in your house.
You can put it anywhere. And as you guys were saying, the whole point is that it is voice controlled, whereas this is voice controlled, but yet they want you to stare at it. They want it to be the center point. I cannot imagine. And I'm somebody who, in theory, would like an object like this, even though I would probably never use the screen. I'm the sort of person, like I said, I'm probably going to buy the look because I'm a dumb person, and I'm an idiot, and I'm like, oh, I don't have a full length mirror. This would be great. Just invite Amazon into my home to have photos of me everywhere, and like I'm that person who literally is like buying into that argument. And even I'm looking at this, and I'm like, there's no way I'm putting this in my house. There's no way.
I have an Amazon parent. So someone who works for Amazon is a parent at the school that I live at. Mm. And she was trying to explain to me all the reasons why I would like this. And her primary thing was it works with all of the Amazon Voice Assistant skills. And I was like, but I can already use those with my Echo. And she goes, well, this is for the people who don't have an Echo.
So they'll have them buy an Echo.
I know.
Exactly.
It's like, well, they didn't buy a Volkswagen. Let's sell them a Porsche. It'd be fantastic.
No, Porsche's pretty.
This is a lot of hate. Is there a good use case for having the screen?
Yes, there is. For letting the NSA into your house more easily.
Yeah, that's every computer you own.
No, I'm sorry. This is like I didn't buy a... I can say Echo, right?
Yes.
Yeah, I didn't buy an Echo or a Dot because it felt like a huge privacy violation. I mean, to Christina's point about the show, that's a whole different kind of kettle of fish. But I mean, this is adding even more capabilities into letting people into my house and to collect data. And frankly, no. It does not feel good to me.
I'm actually with you. I have an Echo. It is unplugged.
Yeah.
I only plug it in whenever I'm doing a project that requires it. I have the voice assistant on my phone turned off by default.
Yeah.
I have Cortana on my Windows 10 computer turned off by default just because I don't like data leaving my network.
Yeah.
Sure.
I respect that.
That's a me thing. It's probably stupid paranoid, but it's a me thing.
No, that's completely not paranoid. But I'm surprised about the amount of like hackers and security researchers that I know that I meet at DEF CON that I hang out with that have
Same.
Amazon Echo and
Same.
Dots. Yeah. They love those
Same.
Things.
They love
like,
them.
Yeah.
They're super
No, that's so
fun.
Funny. They build the Amazon skills for them. And they're like, oh, it's so awesome. Look at all the stuff I'm playing with. And that makes me feel like better about my own poor decisions to let these products into my house. Because yeah. objectively, I know that you're both right. I'm like, I should never have this. I should turn all of this off. And
I have
then
three
I'm like,
of them.
And then I'm like, but I really like to listen to Spotify with my voice. I really like to control Spotify with my voice. I really like to get my news updates. I like to be able to listen to Twit, you know, or whatever. Like, I like that convenience, and I'm willing to give some of that up. But this, what's interesting to me too is, you know, is when we talk about those skills, they are designed for voice. And obviously with the Fire TV, there is a visual interface for some of these things. And so there's precedent for that. But most of the people who are creating skills are doing it, again, without the need for a screen. So
right.
I don't see the unless you know, they can really make the developer play to say, oh, you should really be developing screen-based responses, which is a very different approach to doing things. I don't even know how good the experience is going to be. And honestly, if you did want that visual experience, wouldn't it be better to just have your nice, attractive TV that's already in your home and have your Fire TV mm-hmm. stick like connected to that? I mean, okay, you don't get the camera for the voice calls, but let's be honest. Even the biggest Amazon diehards are never going to use the Amazon voice service because you're never going to be able to convince your family members to like open the Amazon app and make a video call when they could just FaceTime or use, you know, Duo or whatever or Skype or anything else. Already pretty invested in our video systems.
The only thing I'll add to that is FaceTime, Skype, Google Hangouts, and all the other consumer grade video conferencing solutions are bad. And so
yeah.
if this one actually has a high fidelity and a reliable connection that I can use across both oceans and continents, I will buy one just for that.
No, it's still going to be bad.
The thing is,
I was going to say, but yeah. do you believe that actually is going to be the case? Because I certainly don't.
I was trying to find some nice thing to possibly shoot for on this conversation.
No.
It's Christina brought up, you know, it's someone who might have a use case for that screen. Well, if you're going to do that, you can do that from the Amazon Voice Assistant app.
Oh,
on
yeah.
your
right.
phone, which
My
has a nicer screen, and it's already with
yeah.
you. So
there's no use.
This it's weird. It's a very strange placement.
It doesn't make any sense.
So is it going to flop then? Are we saying that?
I think if it were more attractive, they might be able to convince people to do it just yeah. because of how successful the other Echoes have been, right? Like I would even be open to buying one for my mom if it were more attractive. I would have like probably considered it as like a Mother's Day gift or something, honestly. I'm like, okay, hey, we'll get this in a month. But instead, like I'm like, I could never put that in my mom's house. I love my mom. Just, I don't want to do yeah. that to my mother.
That's just mean. It's like your mom made you mad. You're like, oh, you guess what you get? Boom.
Another. This will be the Amazon lump of coal. Is that?
Yeah.
For its shareholders.
How could you? Yeah.
We'll see. Oh, wait. Okay. Let me inject some positivity in here.
Yeah.
A lot of people didn't know what to do with the Echo. When the Echo first came out, they were like, so this will help me shop more? And it turned out to be a blockbuster product. It was not just a blockbuster product.
Right.
It was a new genre inventing product mm-hmm. that everyone.
That's a great point. That's a great point. The Echo, it was funny. They didn't give out review units for a while on the Echo, and so you mm-hmm. had to actually buy one and like apply to get one. And,
it was like
and
a lottery.
So when I was at mm-hmm. yeah, and so when I was at Mashable, I actually got one like very early, and so I was able to do the review when it still only had, you know, a couple of skills. But even then, I was like. this is amazing. And you're right. I remember when it was first announced, we all were kind of like, what? Like, what is this? It was something that the most of the pundits and most of the tech press didn't quite understand. And then it came out and it was a good product and they've continued to make it better. So yeah, I think you're right. For all of my, and I've been like the biggest hater on this thing, but I will add the caveat that like, I didn't believe that the Echo would be as big as it is. And then it came out and I loved it. I think that if they can come out with a more attractive version of this, that would be my only thing, honestly. Like, who knows? They might have real potential. I think the ecosystem for the Echo products is huge. I think the way this one looks is going to automatically make it DOA, at least for me.
Do you think techies will hate it, but consumers will love it?
I don't see what the need is for it. Really?
Yeah, it's ugly.
Yeah, that's it. Like, I don't understand why you had to put a screen on something that worked great. Like, I asked... damn it. I ask it something, it tells me something. I don't have to like do this. Like, well, okay. What's it say?
That's fair.
Because
that's
it's pointed up and I have it on a table. So now I have to do this to look at it. Oh, yeah, it's going to be rainy tomorrow.
Yeah.
It could just tell me it's going to be rainy.
Yeah.
How often do you use it?
All the time.
Like, can you break like 5 times a day?
At least.
Really?
Every day. Same.
Yes. Yes.
And same.
You same? All right.
Yeah.
Wow.
Use it all the time.
When I had it plugged in, essentially all it did was play music for me. Because it's a decent speaker.
It's a great speaker.
Nice, yeah.
The Dot is not.
The Dot is not.
The whole point of Dot is to plug it into your speaker.
You plug it into your speaker. Exactly.
Yeah.
I didn't know.
You can either use Bluetooth or you can use...
I had it plugged in my car for a while. It was my on-dash voices.
Oh my God, that's so cool.
It worked.
It's the new revolutionary Dot to go.
Did you just tether it to your phone? Or?
Yes.
Amazing power.
So it got its internet through my phone. I had it tied into the audio system. I had the Array mics in my car. Mm-hmm. And it actually worked reasonably well.
Can we become best friends? They want to hang out with you all the time. And hang and see all your cool stuff. My life is so boring compared to that.
Well, you have to remember, I have no social life to speak of. So
you're talking to tech journalists.
Neither
does
he.
We do all the time.
But this is all I do. I make stuff. This is my lab.
I mostly lose at video games. Anyways, keep going.
All right, but there is one more attachment to this, and this is the fact that Amazon also announced their, and I can't say it, A-word calling. It's a new skill that allows hands-free... I know, right? It allows for hands-free sending and receiving of calls to anyone with an Echo or the Amazon Voice Assistant app. So it will work on phones. It will work on all the Echoes. It will work, of course, on the new show and on the look. Now, paired with a show, you could also make video calls with this. It's interesting, right? I mean, free. Free is good. It will work on everything you already have. Is this a good thing?
The video calls doesn't make sense because I can make a video call with this.
True.
And I can walk around the house. Look at this.
Exactly.
Look at that. I'm over here. I'm over there. As opposed to staring down at the thing on a... Hey, we're here. What's going on? Oh, just stuff. You can't see it right now.
Robbie's very tall, if you didn't know this.
Yes,
he's the tallest tech journalist of all time. There's a record.
Casey's taller than I am.
He's the second tallest tech journalist of all time. There's a record. It's true.
We use FaceTime in my household, but it's mostly between my brother and my mother because she wants to see the grandchildren. I can't see her tilting the show down so that, no, that's kind of weird.
I mean, do you recall all the times they come out with like the Windows 7 PC for the kitchen, the Windows 8 PC for the kitchen, the Windows Vista PC for the kitchen? They're like, it's going to be touch. You can wave and do all this cool stuff with it. It'll be great. It'll be right there. You can do recipes. Woo! And no one bought them.
That was because the Audrey. The Audrey was the system for the kitchen.
Okay, yeah. Oh. So to me, this is another shot at
Recom Audrey.
Mm-hmm. Sorry, Christina, go for it.
Recom.
My point is, at least this one's cheap. That's it. It has that advantage. It is a low price item, at least.
Yeah, I would say that's probably its best quality, is that this is very inexpensive for what it's ostensibly offering. But again, I wonder, like, wouldn't people be better off getting a Fire tablet? You know,
less than one quarter of the price. Why wouldn't you just do that? Put it on a stand, and now you can walk around.
Put it on a stand. Now you can walk around. You can do all the same stuff with it. It might not be always listening the same way that this device would be, but you, like you said, it'd be portable. You can walk around with it. You can actually talk, you know, with it, all that stuff. And people, I mean, look, people do love to put their tablets in the kitchen. It's a very popular place for people to put tablets. I don't understand this product.
Like, people I see who put tablets, they tend to move. Like, you would a cookbook.
Exactly.
I'm going to have it here.
Precisely.
I'm going to put it there. I'm going to put it here. I'm going to put it there. And you get, like, you know, a nice cheap Google or Android tablet, and you just
I think they should have done a bit more user study, because if they wanted to make something with a screen that would be an indispensable item, it would have been the Amazon Echo Paper, installable in the bathroom with a 7-inch screen, and right below it is the toilet paper dispenser. Because let's be honest.
Yes.
That's where people use those screens.
And that's really the only place where you're not you're stationary looking at it.
I'm out of toilet paper, you hit the dash button.
Yeah, that's perfect.
Amazon, you're welcome.
I love that.
And you're stationary, so you don't need to move it when you're in the bathroom. That's where you should put this. You can put this in the bathroom.
Happy Brother's Day, Mom. We're making toilet jokes.
Yeah, but you can't really tweet from it, so.
But you can't tweet from a Kindle?
From a Kindle?
Yeah.
Oh, you can.
It doesn't have a keyboard.
I see your point.
Do people really do toilet tweets? Is that actually a thing?
Yes.
That's really definitely a thing.
It is?
Like 90% of my tweets are from the toilet.
It's true. I don't want to know that.
I'll be back. I got to go do some tweeting. I just had a big meal.
Okay, on that, I think we're going to be moving away from that. But actually, Christina, we're going to be talking to you for the next one, because this is something that's going to be in your world.
Okay.
Amazon wasn't the only one who released interesting news about voice assistants this past week. We're going to have to talk about Microsoft's effort. But before we get there, let's take another quick break to thank another sponsor of This Week in Tech. Now, hey, you guys lose things, right?
Yeah.
Christina, have you ever lost something that's shiny
so
that
many
you love?
Things.
Right?
Many times.
It's too easy. I say it's easier now because so many high-value items are so small and designed to be so portable that it's easy not just to walk away from them, but it's easy for them to walk away from you. Recently? Yeah? Phone? Keys? Bag? Pet?
Yeah.
Well, if only there was a device that we could use, that we could attach to our most treasured technology possessions, that would allow us to make sure that we always knew where they were, that would allow us to find out down to the meter where they might be located. Well, folks, that exists. It's called the Tracker. The Tracker is a coin-sized device that you can attach to anything you find valuable, to your keys, to your phone, to your computer bag, and yeah, even to your pets. And it allows you to link it up to your phone so that you can, with a single app, find out exactly where it exists, where it is, where it's going. Now, Tracker is possibly the best, the easiest way to track your things, because it uses a lithium battery that lasts for about a year. So you're not going to be constantly changing out the battery on this thing. It's good to go. Not only can you pair a tracker, you can pair up to 10 of them with your phone and get things like separation alerts. So as you're walking away from your bag in the coffee shop, you get a little notification on your phone saying, hey, are you sure you want to be moving away? Because I'm almost out of range. You can even do reverse tracking. You can push a button on your tracker and it will make your phone ring even if it's set to silent. I mean, how good would that be? If you know where your keys are but you can't find your phone, push the button, listen for the tone, there you go. Now, with the Tracker, you never have to worry about losing your things again. The new Tracker Bravo is that coin-sized device, and it's constructed with anodized aluminum, so it's the thinnest, most durable tracking device ever. Once you pair it, you can find out where all your items are. And here's what I really love. It uses something that they're calling Mesh GPS or Crowd GPS. It allows you to find out where a device is, even if it's gone beyond the range of your Bluetooth transmitter and receiver. The way it does that is, as long as your tracker is within range of another tracker user, they can still get the beacon and you can still get the notification. That means that if your phone has wandered across the world and it is now somewhere in India, you can still push that button and find out on what street it's located. It's that cool. In fact, a while ago, for one of my other shows, Know How, I had a gig bag that I left in our garage at the high school. And unfortunately, someone opened up the garage during one of our open campus days. Someone had wandered into the garage, took my gig bag, and left with some prototype devices. It really bummed me out. But what really ticked me off was when my audience said, wait a minute, you've had the tracker on your network for a year. Why didn't you have one on your bag? And yeah, that was one of those smack my head moments. With over 4.5 million devices shipped, Tracker has the largest crowd GPS network in the world. So again, you're always going to be able to find your item, even if it's wandered away from you by miles, by states, by countries. And the distance indicator on the Tracker app will show you if you're getting closer or further away from your item. So there's a little bit of detection finding skill involved. And with a 30-day money-back guarantee, there's no reason not to give it a try. Folks, are you tired of losing your stuff? Well, you can stop losing your stuff today. Go to thetracker.com and enter the promo code TWIT, and you'll get a free Tracker Bravo with any order. That's The Tracker, thetracker.com, promo code TWIT for your free Tracker Bravo with any order. And we thank Tracker for their support of This Week in Tech. All right, let's move on to a lesser-known voice assistant, but I think one that is important nonetheless. That's Cortana. Of course, Cortana is built into every Windows 10 device. It's in the Xbox One. And now Microsoft wants to make it a standalone device. They don't want it to be tied to the PC. They don't want it to be tied to your TV. They want it to be something like what Google and Amazon have with their respective voice assistants. At Build, which was this last week, it was clear that Microsoft wants to go after this market. They see it as lucrative. I think they saw what most tech journalists saw at CES. Everything is Amazon. Everything had an Amazon integration. I mean, the refrigerators, washers, dryers, TVs. They're all realizing, why build my own thing when I can use Amazon's? And Microsoft wants some of that. You all saw that. I mean, how many of you went to CES?
It's ridiculous how big the Echo has gotten. And
so quickly,
I'm
too.
Always yeah. And my my thought is, what took Microsoft so long? And apparently Apple's working on the same thing, but come on, guys.
Yeah.
Gift the program.
Well, I mean, Siri's been out the longest of all these things, and it's the worst of all of them.
Oh, yeah, but Siri's.
And I say that, you know, Apple has different privacy rules and how they segment data, and so I don't mean that in a way to cast aspersions, but I mean, Cortana is somewhere in the middle, in my experience, between A word and then Siri at the bottom. Is that good enough?
Yeah.
Okay, I'm trying, guys. I don't want to trigger anyone by accident. But Cortana is fine. You know, I have it on Windows 10, but you know, I've never thought to myself, I really have to have this in more devices. But then again, I'm the guy without a Dot or an Echo. So maybe I'm the weird person out here. But this sounds like a reasonable move, but not one that I'm exactly jumping up and down screaming like, yes, about.
Yeah. Christina, do you use Windows 10 at all? That's probably the wrong question to ask you at this point.
She has an Xbox. I see an Xbox.
Yeah, I have an Xbox One S.
There we go. You have Cortana.
Woo.
Yeah, it does. And so
is your fun employment going to stretch on a little bit longer now? Sorry.
I'm sorry about that, Christina. We'll put that on the back.
I will be using Windows 10 every day very soon, and I'm very excited about it.
You're not a journalist anymore. You don't have to worry about ethics. Just say whatever you want now. Normal's life.
Yeah. You are now in the realm of the normals, and they have much more freedom. But okay, let's talk a little bit about what Microsoft is doing here, because they realize that even though technically they have a much larger installed base than Amazon ever will, because it's included in Windows 10, which they allowed people to get for free.
Right. And just crossed the 500 million monthly active device number.
Right.
So a half billion.
Right.
And for example, I have about a dozen Windows 10 devices in my lab, all of which have Cortana turned off. And I don't think I'm alone in that. I think a lot of people see that. Hi, I'm Cortana. I'm your voice assistant. No, go away.
And they're like, no, I don't want to. I mean, when I've reviewed Windows laptops, I certainly usually will use Cortana more than I ever used, say, Siri on the Mac, because Siri on the Mac is
garbage.
It's superfluous. There's really not a point to it. Whereas at least Cortana, you can get some interesting results and do some things. But it's, I don't know, maybe it's just me. Maybe I'm wrong in this, but where I understand, you know, Siri and Google Assistant on phones and how that can be useful. I think really where the voice assistant stuff has become the most useful, and this is what Amazon nailed, was realizing that it is the secondary devices in the home that are these speaker types of things. That's really where it becomes interesting. And that's why at CES we saw so many integrations. And that's why Microsoft is obviously so interested in expanding Cortana into this space. Because I think that, at least for me, the way I use stuff, I mean, I might use Siri to set an alarm on my phone, and I might use, you know, maybe Cortana for a similar purpose, to connect to a network or to, you know, do some sort of quick, you know, search if it's just faster. But in general, I don't even think to do that. I tend to instead get the most value out of those sorts of voice assistants if it's set an alarm or set a timer or play this channel or what's the weather, you know, those sorts of things that are really best suited for a third party device rather than something that's integrated into my computer where I can just Google something, or my phone where similarly I can just, you know, open up a web page and type in and I'm right there.
Yeah, you're here. And for me, I get it. I've played with Cortana. It's actually quite good, and it gives me interesting analysis, which I don't find from other assistants. But problem has always been, I have my keyboard and my mouse. If I'm at my computer, I am always faster than me asking Cortana to do something. So why
every
would I ask
time.
Cortana?
Yeah.
Every single time. There's so it's a walk away device. It's a voice assistant. It's like the Echo. And that's what they now realize. Okay, we have to have that device that proves the utility of Cortana. It's a hands-free device when you're away from the keyboard and the mouse.
Is this just Echo Envy?
That's no. I actually see this as part of the strategy. You have to remember, Nadella came from Microsoft's web services side.
That's what I'm.
Yeah, and he's always been about web services first. And part of web services first is leveraging the integrations that Microsoft can offer that no one else can. They love using things that they can do that Amazon can't. And I think they're betting on two things. The first is they're using the PC model of voice assistant. So unlike Amazon and Google, they're not building their own thing. Or they will as a reference device. They want partners.
Right.
So they've brought in HP, Intel, Invoke Speakers, BMW, Nissan. They want their partners to build the devices just like their PCs. And I think that gives them the edge as far as penetration. So you'll see a more varied variety of voice assistants in different circumstances. You'll find them in the car. You'll find them in the appliances. But the second thing, and I think this is their big advantage. This is why I would not count them out. They can offer far more integration than Apple, Google, or Amazon.
How?
In the sense that they have your calendar, they have your travel plans, they have your search history, they have your timesheets, they have IoT data. If they're tied into your enterprise network, they have your enterprise networking data. And all of those things, they've already integrated into Cortana. Cortana can make some amazing correlations based on your contact sheet and who you're getting email from.
That's a corporate. That's a corporate play.
It is.
I mean, it. Google does have my travel plans. Google does have my calendar. Google does have all this stuff. I don't care. You know, the average person doesn't care about their timesheets at home.
it's not bringing up your timesheets, but it will. You'll find Cortana doing something like, it will know that according to your timesheet, you've worked this much, so you probably need a vacation, and it knows that this is when you get paid, so these are good times to pitch you on vacations.
So it's going to try to sell me stuff?
Not necessarily. It depends on your settings.
I'm not down for that. Can I ad block Cortana?
I think I just know that I need a vacation. If I need a robot in my house to tell me, you know, Robbie, you need a vacation.
Can Cortana then take pain?
I should have known that like weeks ahead of time.
Robbie, I've noticed you're bleeding out of your eyes. It might be time to step away from the computer.
Oh, dear.
You punched the wall 3 times in 4 days. Yeah. How are you doing today? I don't think they're going to be intelligent enough for us digital, not natives per se, but digital constants. Like, this is where we live all the time, to actually improve our lives. But then again, I try to think of the use case for like my parents. You know, like, they're less digitally centered than we are. So perhaps this would be a good extension of, you know, modern technology into their more functional lives. But I'm with you, dude. I can type so much faster than I can talk. Like, it's not even a question.
I'm kind of down on voice assistants for myself in general, just for that very fact. I don't like talking to things.
No,
I
very
like
talking
to people. I definitely don't want to talk to devices.
I like yelling across the room. And that's kind of
ding!
So close.
Robbie agreed to do 10 push-ups after the show.
I can't
every
do
time.
10 push-ups. There was no way I would agree to that. I might be able to pull off like a third of a push-up.
I'll pay you $100 to do 10 push-ups.
What?
Wow. Cash. Robbie will do it.
I still don't think I could do 10 push-ups. That's a sad thing. I would like
$100. Are we talking about real push-ups or like just kind of hover a little bit?
Well, for you, half push-ups. For Robbie, full deal.
I don't know if I could do 10 push-ups.
That's off.
Yeah.
I haven't surfed in so long. Anywho, I like yelling across the room at my digital assistants. And where I don't have a keyboard, like at my house, I'm sitting there and I want something to happen or I want a question answered, I can yell it. In the car, like when it works well, Siri does not. So it works.
You have
great.
A way bigger house than I am because where
no,
I live
in a tiny little apartment. And
if
I just
I
like,
want something to happen, I am within arm's reach of the device. That
yeah, but you
that
have
happen.
12 computers like okay, all around you. I just assume your house is just every surface has a computer on it.
He's living Bill Gates' original fantasy. A computer on every desk.
I have to have a different set of computers for every type of work I do. They never mix. That's the thing with me. I'm serious. They never
have my
mix.
Cooking computer.
I have my personal computer, but then like the computers I use for the Vatican work are different than the computers I use for the Twit work.
Okay, that's
which
fair.
Are different than the computers I use for my school work.
That's actually reasonable. All right, reasonable, and all right, I can't that's make a reasonable. Joke about that because it sounds fair. All
right. It sounded more like you were just like, yeah, this is my computer for how when I order E24.
I wouldn't make a hoarder joke, but then it wouldn't have come out very well. So,
No, we have hoarders in my order. You have to remember, anyone that was lived through the Depression has already a natural tendency to being a hoarder. And we have a lot of those. And whenever they die, we have to clean out their rooms, and it's amazeballs.
There is so much in that sentence that I want to unpack,
really,
but we don't have time for. But just give us one example. What's an amazing thing you found during these post-life?
When I was living in Los Angeles, I lived next to a brother, Brother McDermott. I love him. I have no problem saying his name. And we were clearing – he was a geologist. We were clearing out his workshop. We found more than $150,000 in uncashed checks and bonds that he had just received over 60 years of a career and just tossed them to a box.
Oh, my goodness.
We also found an actual moon rock that we returned to NASA, who said, how did you get a moon rock?
Well, I went to the moon, and it was great.
All right. That's amazing. How do you know it was a moon rock? Well, was it labeled?
Well, we saw this. It had no label.
Moon and Sharpie.
But it was like, because he had a lot of really valuable stones in his lab, but then there was one that was under a container, and I was looking at it going, wait a minute. And so I contacted a friend I have at JPL. I said, are there any missing moon rocks? He goes, actually, there's one. I'm like, oh.
No.
I think I have it.
There was one missing moon rock?
There was one.
Are you serious? Pinky swear.
Pinky swear.
Pinky swear. All right.
Actually, my superior can verify it because he's the one who had to do the turnover.
On the moon.
It was kind of amazing.
Well, who got the money?
Amazing.
No, there's no money.
The $150,000.
No, the problem is a lot of those are bonds and checks. They expire. So there was maybe $10,000 in cash, and that went to the school, but the rest of it was just wasted. You can't. I mean, a check that's 18 years old, they're not going to let you cash it.
Isn't there?
I didn't know that.
Yeah. Oh, really?
I kind of grew up with checks.
Oh, we got millennials here. Have you ever written a check?
Oh, yeah, I have a checkbook.
Yeah, of course.
You have to pay rent, right?
When you fill out your
no, you Venmo. You Venmo your rent now.
Oh, that's right. When you have to do electronic transfer, that's from your checkbook, right? Oh, no, it's not. Not anymore.
Venmo hooks up to my checking account, sure, okay. I mean, I don't, yeah, like, writing checks is like, I'm in jail, or my friend is getting out of jail, or something. Like,
how do you pay your rent?
It's just direct transfer every month.
Christina, how do you pay your rent?
Yeah, and I literally Venmo my landlord.
Oh, what I do is I write all the checks for the year, and I put them in an envelope, because they wouldn't do anything, because I hate, the idea of writing checks is the worst. I just give them an envelope full of checks, and I'm like, just cash them throughout the year.
I got a checkbook when I opened up my current account, which I opened 20 years ago with Wells Fargo. The book is currently on check number 17.
Yeah, I completely
How do you pay your rent?
Rent.
Sorry.
Rent? What are you talking
about?
Actually, let's ask our audience. How many of you still use a check on an average monthly basis?
See?
No, right?
One person.
Who's paying? So
Burke does, but Burke's weird.
So I have the only landlord that's like living in the 90s? Yes. What's going on?
No, so I live in Lake County, and there's a couple of companies that just do not accept anything except checks. That's the only thing they do.
Yeah.
We only take checks.
Yes.
Checks I don't think I could live someplace that only took checks. That would feel really shady to me.
Yeah, that's weird. Yeah. No, I mean, before we Venmo,
right, and that's why I have my checkbook.
Your landlord takes Venmo, right?
I wish I could pay my rent with my credit card and get mad points, but they don't let me.
Well, see, they were going to let us pay by credit card, but then if we did that, we'd have to pay like an extra 5%. And I was like, no. The processing fee or whatever. I was like, screw that. That's not happening. Yeah. So for a while before the landlord was on Venmo, we would do like a certified check because there had been a problem
certified.
At one point. With
wow.
Yeah. That's even more annoying. Then you have to like go to the bank and like actually have them do it and like pay $10 and it's a whole thing.
You had to go inside the bank.
Think of how much security does not exist that we are so used to when you write a check. So the verification is your signature at the bottom of the check, and the amount is determined by the number you write in pen on the top of the check. That's it.
Yeah.
Well, you got to spell it out as well. That's the security. That's spelling it out.
That's the thing that hits me the most whenever I do have to write a check, which is my spelling is really bad. And thank God for spell check because 17. That's SEVEN. It's just teen, right? Just nothing.
You know what's
T-3-3-N? You know,
15. How do you spell 15?
Uh, It's not Fifteen, so it'd be F-I-F-T-E-N. Yeah.
So yep. I know people who write F-I-V-E.
I just give them the extra dollar. Yeah. It's a 16.
Just round it up so it's an easier number to spell.
Just take it. Take the dollar. It's not worth it.
No, what I was going to say, though, what's so funny is that the technology for scanning checks and like the OCR stuff in the apps, you know, like Bank of America's app and like the Chase app and things like that is incredibly good, even for like terrible handwriting. So the few times somebody will send me a check and I'll need to cash it, you can now like cash it with like the Bank of America app. So like you open up your app and you take a photo of the check and like the front side and the back side, and they're like, we will deposit this in your account. And like, you don't even have to go to the bank anymore. And it's a similar thing. Like if you actually go to the bank now, like to deposit it through the ATM, it's like scanning the check and like, you know, doing OCR, and it's actually quite good. So that tech is kind of cool. But yeah, it's the 6 years that I lived in New York, I very, very, very rarely ever had to write a check, to the point that I don't think I ever updated my checkbook with my New York address. So yeah. When I lived in Atlanta, towards the end, I think the only way I ever wrote checks was to my hairdresser and to pizza. And then, you know, and that was it. So it was like Pizza Hut and like the hair salon. Like that was it.
Do you have the checkbooks that have the carbon paper underneath the check so it keeps a copy?
Yeah.
I still have that.
Wow.
I love that thing. It's awesome.
What a vintage is
it's
that?
It's like 1735? An email receipt.
It's a receipt.
It was like 2000, basically.
So yeah. You made a receipt for, what'd you do with the receipt afterwards? You like, hold on to it?
No, it stays in the checkbook. It's attached.
It stays
so you tear
in
out the check, but the carbon stays attached.
Oh, my mom had that when I was a kid. Yeah. I'm sorry, that came out dismissive. I meant honestly. Sorry.
The last checks I got in like 2006 had those. And they were like DC comic checks. I had like Superman and Wonder Woman checks.
Cool.
They're really cool, actually.
How do we
I like those
checks. About checks.
Money.
You're talking about Cortana. Wow. Okay, that's different.
Venmo. There we go.
I will say that here's a quick life hack. I recently had to donate, or didn't have to. I donated $10,000 to a project to do something at DEF CON because I want them to build something awesome for the attendees. And they let me use PayPal. The reason why I used PayPal was because I now have $10,000 of spend on my credit card, which goes to my frequent flyer miles. So if you're looking for a quick way to get to your what do they call that? Because you have to have a certain spend in order to get mileage now. That's a very easy way to do it.
Just have $10,000, have something to give it to them,
well,
voila.
I mean, even if you don't do that, because with the special promotion, $10,000 transferred through PayPal, through my credit card, cost me $160.
Okay.
And that's much less than it would cost if I actually tried to hit that spend. So if you're looking to do that on your frequent flyer account, that's actually a decent way to hack it.
It's a good idea.
You could PayPal to yourself. You actually can.
So you could pay your rent with your through PayPal.
Yeah, put it on your credit card.
Ooh, earn frequent flyer miles.
Yeah.
Put the spend there.
People are like, no.
No, that sounds like so much work. I'm not going to do it.
Oh, it takes 2 seconds.
I don't think about finance that much. It makes me nervous.
You like, that's all you do is think about finance.
Oh, by the way, 10,000 is the max, because if you do 10,001, they do like a 2 week long security check, just FYI.
Gotcha.
The law comes after you.
How do you know that?
It's a Jesuit thing. Okay. All right, let's move on to something else that is not checks or Quintana. A laptop ban. This actually hit me because I was flying back from Malta Thursday, Friday, Saturday. Well, I got back over the weekend, and Delta actually had me check my laptop into my bag because they were afraid that a travel ban was going to take place while I was en route, because it was a 31-hour trip.
Oh, wow.
I transferred twice, and they were like, well, if it happens and you hit the United States, they're not going to let you carry your laptop through. This is something that DHS will be doing. They're not exactly sure when they're going to institute it, but they're going to be banning laptops in the cabins of all airlines going from Europe to the United States. Previously, they had banned it just from a certain number of countries. Now it will be any European flight, you will not be allowed to carry a laptop in the cabin. You got to put in your check-in
luggage. Does it cover tablets as well?
Not yet.
What about 2-in-1s?
Or what about really large tablets? What about this, which is about the size of a tablet?
It makes zero sense.
Yeah.
Because they're not going to tell us what the problem is, but what is whatever security issue they're concerned of is, could it be, you know, an explosive? If you have gone that far to make a computer into an explosive, it's going to take you five extra minutes to trigger that with your cell phone that's in your pocket on in the cabin.
Unless you have a Note 7.
Unless you, yeah.
Then you've got two bombs in one.
Too easy. All right, Now, this was brought about by intelligence that they did receive that terrorists were modifying laptops to act as an explosive device. In fact, an Airbus 320 last year had to make an emergency landing after one of these was set off, and it actually blew a hole, a decent-sized hole through the fuselage. Was able to land, but that spooked a lot of people because they knew that they were trying to do it, and they had finally figured it out. They're not releasing any of the technical details, but from what I was able to hear on the darker side of the internet was it's a combination of a binary explosive and actually using the lithium ion battery that's in the battery, because they've realized there's a lot of chemical energy in there. And if you can have a big enough runaway reaction, it's very energetic, right? It does actually explode, especially if you combine it with the binary reagent.
So this is not security theater then?
This is not security theater. This is actually so, but it kind of still is.
But the shoe thing is still, because remember that guy once? That one time he was trying to light up a bomb that was in his shoe. So now we all have to take our shoes off. So the fact that, you can't take laptops on your computer, you think the terrorists are still like, well, you know, let's keep doing that laptop thing.
There's actually a whole
they're putting them down here. Let's keep putting that laptop thing.
Well, there's an XKCD comic about a man arguing with a TSA agent at the gate because the TSA agent wouldn't let him bring his bottle of water. And he was trying to convince win the argument by saying, but my laptop has way more explosive potential than that bottle of liquid.
Don't make that argument inside the airport.
No,
kids.
Don't do it.
Don't do it.
No, do not. Yeah. Do
you
not.
You'll stay in the airport for a long period of time.
But I want to go with what you were saying. Where do you stop? Because the problem isn't the laptop. There it is. The problem is the lithium ion battery. And that lithium ion technology exists in your phone. It exists in your watch. It exists in your tablet. It exists in any mobile device.
You're not allowed to check battery packs. I travel with a lot of battery packs because I'm always out in the middle of nowhere in a car or whatever. And so I need to be able to charge things all the time. So I can't check these like bricks.
Yep.
So I bring them on the plane. I stick them in a real thing. There's nothing that would stop someone from doing the same thing with a brick.
Yeah. And that's by design because they've actually had, in 2016, there were 33 incidents of fire. This was not malicious. This was just devices catching on fire. It happens. You pinch a lithium poly pack the wrong way, you expose it to oxygen, and suddenly it's a runaway pack. And what the FAA is worried about is that the traditional fire suppressant technology that planes carry do not work against lithium ion packs. A water extinguisher or a halon extinguisher will not extinguish the flame. And it's not the flame that will affect you. It's all the smoke that it's going to release into the cabin. If it's in the cargo hold, there's no way to get to it.
So
we should just not have electronics anymore?
No. I mean, I don't like that idea.
I'm totally fine with that. You know what? Let's go back to being Amish.
Okay. You're not you know that what? Old, Robbie.
That's fine.
You're almost halfway there. I mean, is there any middle ground here that's functional and safe that allows us to still have entertainment on planes? I read mostly analog, so I don't really care too much.
I sleep.
Well, that becomes the irony too, right? Is that more and more the airlines are moving away from putting in in-flight entertainment, like in putting in screens and TV, in the planes, and being like, oh no, just use your iPad. Just use your tablet and sign onto our app on our network and use, you know, access your server that way. Like that's literally becoming one of the ways that they're trying to cut money, you know, on in-flight entertainment things. So there's like a certain amount of like business pressure versus like security theater or maybe not security theater, maybe valid concerns like are going to be kind of pushing up against one another if they do start to ban more and more types of devices from being carried on, because then it's like literally like what are people going to do?
All right.
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense because now you've told everybody, hey, we're not going to let these on anymore. And again, if you're the kind of person who's already created an explosive out of a computer, you're going to be able to trigger it with this.
Right.
Well, I just hope we all don't get taken down, but I can't imagine I'm going to fly any less because of this. I don't think it's going to impact my behavior at all. No. It's going to be an annoyance that I'll get over.
I can't use my computer on the plane anyway.
Why not?
Because I'm too tall. I look like a T-Rex. I'm like typing like this. I'm never comfortable. Are you working? Yeah, I'm writing an article.
You need one of the tablets, one of the convertibles that actually lets you put the screen forward.
What?
You seen those? Like the Acer R13? It's on a pivot, So you can actually, the screen moves up and it's on still on the swivel, but you put it here so that the keyboard's actually behind the screen.
I've seen
that used on planes. It works really, really well.
That's pretty cool.
I still don't have a lot of room.
Is that why you don't use a mouse in the office?
No, I don't use a mouse because I was starting to get carpal tunnel in my right hand, so I use a tablet now.
Okay.
I've been using a tablet for like 10
Robbie
years.
Robbie has a very particular work setup at his desk, and I really appreciate it. We're like 10 feet apart now, so.
Besties at the workplace.
Yeah, see, this actually doesn't affect me that much because I don't use my electronics in the cabin. I'm normally sleeping or watching something on the entertainment system. So if I have to check everything, the only thing I will miss is my phone. I like having my phone because I use it when I'm in between on connection.
Of course.
But, I mean, that's actually – it's a big impediment to doing business if you don't have your electronic devices with you. If they were to say, look, they can't travel in the cabin or in the cargo hold, you have to ship it to yourself.
Oh, my gosh. That's
– Oh, God. That would be a nightmare.
Because that's the only way to make these things safe. Because they will still catch on fire in the cargo hold if they were going to catch on fire in the cabin.
That's my nightmare.
I mean, do you remember
going
way back in the history of computing, people talked about thin clients in the 90s.
Right.
Once we had broadband everywhere, you weren't going to have a computer where you or wherever you ended up. You could just log into your own instance and go from there. Sun was working on this back in the day, if you remember Sun.
Yes, Oracle too.
Sun. Yeah, exactly. And we didn't go that way as a world of computing. But maybe if that happens, we'll be forced in that direction really late, much later than we thought it may have ever happened. But I mean, I cannot imagine not having a computer for more than like, when I get out of the shower, I'm like, give me a computer. It's been like five minutes.
Hotel Wi-Fi is the worst. The thin client will not work. I have to use hotel Wi-Fi all the time. And I'm like, nope, Wi-Fi. And even the Wi-Fi is, you know, depends on where I'm at. It's the worst. A thin client will not work.
Christina, you had something?
I was just saying like, you're right. Like, this would just be a nightmare. If the one positive thing, I mean, obviously having to ship your laptop or rely on thin clients would be terrible. The one positive thing, I guess, I mean, it's not positive for everybody, but if you can't use the laptop in the cabin, then, you know, people like employers who try to basically force you to work on, you know, on flights, you know, that's like a great excuse to no longer having to turn literally every free moment when we're not in the office into a working option, you know, because sorry. Can't work on the flight, guys. Can't file those blogs because they won't let me.
Well, who's gonna file the blogs, man? Come on.
Oh, by the way, I do want to thank Air Malta because they had the old style planes that still had the Ethernet jack. And you could watch movies over the in plane network. And here's the best part: it actually copied a copy of the file to my computer before it started playing. So now I have Moana on my computer.
Yay. So I actually pulled up a map while we were talking of where Malta is. Because I knew roughly, but couldn't actually like point to which bit of the ocean it was the speck.
It's in the Med.
Yeah, it's right. No, but I couldn't like, you know, pinpoint.
It was the most bombed city during World War II because it's where the British were staging their push into Africa.
Right. Yeah.
That place is amazing. We went down into the catacombs. It runs almost the entire city of Mdina. And there was a place where you could pay a fee and you would bring your family down into these tiny little concrete bunkers while the city was getting blown apart.
You had to
pay a fee.
Yeah, you had to pay a fee. So if you were poor, you had to.
Dude, that's some late stage capitalism.
true, very true. All right, so but I mean it's going to happen. So are any of you going to Europe anytime in the near future?
I don't think so.
Yeah, I was going to go in the fall, actually.
So you can have your laptop in the cabin on the way over, and you'll have to check it in on the way back.
I picked the wrong year to stop drinking. It's going to be a really boring flight.
You can still take your tablet and your battery pack and your phone.
Come on,
I only use a tablet for traveling so I can watch movies.
Christina, do you do your real work on a tablet, or do you still have a laptop?
I remember there
were press rooms at CES, NAB, all the big events, and the big craze for a couple of years was everyone working on tablets, and now I'm seeing them coming back.
Same. People like Federico from Mac Stories, like he's been able to make the Mac, the iPad Pro, like his primary computer for years, and he has a ridiculously complex setup, and like more power to him. Fed is a great guy. Me, absolutely not. Like I need an actual computer. Like I don't care if it's running Windows. I don't care if it's running, you know, Mac OS. It could even be a Chromebook. That's harder, but I would prefer a Chromebook to just having being forced to have my iPad.
I don't have time to screw around with a tablet.
Yeah. We were at CES in one of those kind of godforsaken hallways that you get stuck in before different keynotes.
Yep.
And back at TC, Kyle Russell, before we went to Andreessen, was on the crew, and he was sitting there on the floor, which is very common. And he had one of those little third-party iPad stands and the crappy little keyboard.
Right.
And I just wanted to, like, give him a hug. Like, no, just get him. They'll give you a real computer. Why are you trying to run an F1 race in a go-kart? Like, it just right. doesn't make any
but,
sense.
My favorite is seeing press people who are trying to use the wireless keyboard with a tablet, but they don't yes. have a desk. It's on their lap.
Oh, yeah. But they're always
in
like...
In the conference hall.
It's the 65 and up blogging community. It's kind of rolling with their glasses down and out here like, well, I'm going to log on now. God bless those people. They're still around.
Yeah. Well, let's move on. I do want to talk about something that I think it's important because this is in its nascent stage and we actually do still have a say. Specifically, Comcast and Charter are going to be moving into a new venture and they've decided that it would probably be better... In their best interest, of course, if they didn't compete. I think maybe consumers should have a say in that. But before we get there, I do want to take another moment to thank another sponsor of This Week in Tech. And thankfully, it's a sponsor that has something that is near and dear to my heart, and that is eating healthy. Here's the question. What do you do when you're hungry, when you're rummaging around, and yet the only stuff that you can find is junk food? It's bad for you. It's chips. It's cookies. It's ice cream. Well, folks, you need to make sure that your house, that your workplace, that your office, that your apartment is stocked with good eats, with things that can satisfy your desire to snack, but won't completely destroy your body in 10 to 20 years, which is why I'm happy that This Week in Tech is brought to you by NatureBox. Now, when you rely on your self-control to resist the temptation, you need to make sure that you can be rewarded at some point. And the way that you reward yourself is making sure that your snacks are hearty and healthy. NatureBox makes snacks that actually taste great and are better for you. They've created them with a high-quality set of ingredients that are free from artificial colors, flavors, or sweeteners, so you can feel great about snacking. It's no longer, oh my goodness, I ate a bag of chips. It's, oh my goodness, I ate a bag of healthy mini Belgian waffles or sriracha-flavored nuts. My personal favorites are the Big Island pineapple, the cranberry almond bites, the whole wheat raspberry figgy bars. They taste fantastic. I know, okay, those may sound a bit health foodish, but they're not. They're just delicious, delicious snacks. And they recently made their service even better. Now you can order as much as you want, as often as you want, and no minimum purchase is required. So you can cancel anytime. It's simple. You just go to naturebox.com and check out their snack catalog. There are over 100 snacks to choose from, and they're constantly adding delicious new snacks to their menu. You can choose the snacks that you want, and they'll deliver them right to your door. Now, with NatureBox, you'll never get bored. There are new snacks each month inspired by customer feedback. And if you ever try a snack that you don't like, NatureBox will replace it for free. How about that for customer service? Folks, if you are looking for a better way to live, if you're looking for a better way to snack, you owe it to yourself to try NatureBox. Right now, you'll save even more. NatureBox is offering our fans 50% off your first order when you go to naturebox.com/twit. That's naturebox.com/twit for 50% off your first order. And we thank NatureBox for their support of This Week in Tech. All right, so back to the tease. Comcast and Charter on Monday, they made a joint announcement that they would, and I'm going to use a quote here, explore potential opportunities for operational cooperation in their respective wireless businesses to accelerate and enhance each company's ability to participate in the national wireless marketplace, unquote.
In non-crap speak, what does that mean?
It means that what they want to do is they want to license service from Verizon, become an MVNO, mm-hmm. that's a mobile virtual network operator. They're probably going to combine it with features that they will integrate into their services so that it gives it some unified communication / enterprise-y feel, and then resell it to their customers. But here's the thing. They've decided that they're not going to compete. So going into this venture, they've agreed that if either of them ever want to make another acquisition, let's say Comcast says, hey, you know what, we can buy T-Mobile. Or let's say Charter says there's a local operator that we want to buy and it's in Comcast territory. They have to get the permission of the other.
That's not creepy. That's not, yeah.
I mean, yeah, I'm a capitalist.
That's totally cool.
That's totally, yeah. Just expect all your bills to go up is what that means.
Yeah, whenever two corporations get along, I presume that I'm losing somehow.
Yeah, right?
And again, I'm a capitalist. I'm not trying to say I'm opposed to corporate entities doing well. But I mean, this seems very creepy to me. And it's probably pretty good for Verizon because they have both working off a network and kind of going together. But I can't imagine this is going to be good for consumers, aside from there will be some modest amount of increased competition in certain areas. But I mean, this is it's creepy, to use Robbie's word, and also I just, ugh.
Yeah, it smells anti-competitive. I mean, yes. it's literally, mm-hmm. It's in the wording. We're not going to compete against each other.
I believe that's the definition.
Yeah.
Anti-competitive.
It's really interesting because in a different administration, in a different era, like this would be the sort of thing that would immediately, I think, trigger intervention from Congress or somebody to look into this, you know, because this just on its face just smells bad. This just doesn't seem okay.
Do you think Tom Wheeler would have been in favor of this?
No.
Do you think Ajit Pai would be in favor of this?
Oh, gosh. Yes.
You mean former Verizon employee Ajit Pai? Yes.
Yeah. Yes, I do. I have not heard that before.
I will say, though, to his credit, charming, but wrong about everything.
Yes. Yes.
Charming, but wrong.
Yes. I don't really care how charming he is.
It's like an uncle.
He's trying to dismantle net neutrality and a bunch of other things.
Oh, yeah. No, he's an awful human.
Yeah, but yeah, he's charming. Charming doesn't really matter to me.
What? I'm trying to find nice things to say along the show to not be negative all the time.
Okay, but I will say this, though, about Ajit Pai. I absolutely, unlike with you, I do not agree with his policies. I think he's wrong. However, he's been very consistent about them. Unlike a lot of other people who will flip-flop, he, 2 years ago, he told everyone his stand on net neutrality, and he's stayed by it. I think his defense of it is absolutely indefensible, but at least he stayed with it.
So you're saying we should give him more points because he hasn't done any self-education whatsoever in the intervening period.
It's such a low bar. It is such a low bar. But I'm just saying,
if
you're
going to be horrible, at least be consistent.
Like Newt Gingrich is consistently horrible.
Right.
But consistently horrible.
Yes.
You know, all right.
Okay. Wow. I don't want to go across. That's a very, very sharp
I know.
Clip,
I'm dancing around
gonna,
it.
We're going to go down there.
Yeah.
Okay. But here's the thing. They know that this is going to trigger all sorts of smell alerts because it does smell anti-competitive. It does smell like this would be nothing but a losing bet for consumers. But here's their argument. And they actually address this in the press release. They say this is not going to run afoul of anti-competition regulation because they don't currently compete in this arena. This is not a cable infrastructure project. This is a wireless project. And therefore, since they don't currently hold any stake in that, they're just saying, well, you play over there and I play over here.
No.
I don't think that makes it better, but that's their argument. That's how they're going to defend this.
I wonder if that would work in court.
Broadband is broadband no matter how you get it.
Okay.
It doesn't matter. And that's really what these companies are, you know, Comcast, Charter, Verizon, they're all it's a broadband play. Cable TV is just sort of like a thing that they have now. Broadband's the future. They know it's the future. Whether they're going to shove that pipe into your house or over the air into your phone, it's still broadband and still anti.
You don't draw a distinction between wireline and wireless, to use the industry slang?
No, not anymore.
It's the old bits or bits.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter how you get the bits, you're getting the bits.
Oh, yeah. I agree with this entirely. I don't know what Rob's like.
I wish we had someone on the panel
I like the word
like
bits
violently
bits.
Disagreed.
I just like the word bits.
Christina, could you please dismantle net neutrality?
Oh,
dang.
No, in fact, actually, one time I was asked to do that on a major cable network, and I declined.
Wait, which one?
Fox.
Wait, business or Fox? Fox, official Fox.
No, Fox. And I was specifically asked to go on. They wanted me to talk about net neutrality, and they specifically asked me to disagree. And I said, I'm not going to do that. And then that they were no longer interested in me coming on the network.
Did they say they wanted you to disagree as devil's advocate, or they wanted you to pretend like that was your actual?
They needed some. They wanted someone on expressly with the position that net neutrality was bad, and came to me for that. And the place that I worked at the time asked me, "Well, would you consider doing that?" And I said, "Absolutely not. And under no circumstances will I go on television and say something that I don't believe, just so we can go on television."
As a smaller
get, I'll clap.
High five for ethics.
High five, yay! Absolutely. But you don't need those anymore because you're no longer a journalist.
Now you can do whatever you want.
Yeah. Now you can go on the Fox and say, "Oh, net neutrality, I heard that kills people."
Frank Shaw told me.
Every time.
You're trying to get me fired already.
What people don't know is that sort of preamble to a cable news hit's incredibly common. Like whenever you go on CNBC little earpiece, they say, show us energy. And they pick people that have different opinions on purpose to create an argument on the network. It's not by accident. They pick people that are pro and con. You know, in a really simplistic fashion, and then they amp you up and then they have you on for 4 minutes to argue, and then they just drop you, and you're
and then they drop you. But in some cases, they will say, "I want you to talk about a specific issue and explain something." And that's usually the context that I would go on television, would be to explain something, and usually not to have an opinion, unless it was expressly asked. This was a weird situation where I was expressly asked to hold an opinion and go on a show and argue for that opinion, and that was something that I was. And it's funny, I can share this now because I'm no longer a journalist. I was like, absolutely not. There's no way. There's no way.
Wait. This is blowing me away. Are you saying there are people out there who will prostitute their own personal opinions and their worldview in order to be on TV?
We already talked about Newt Gingrich, man. I mean, come on now.
let me try to play devil's advocate here.
All right. We
do want another player in the wireless service industry, correct? We would desperately like another national player, because any sort of competition on the national level will drive down prices for consumers. So I could see themselves saying, look, we don't have enough capital to compete against another new player. But if both of us get into this, eventually we will be at the level where we can compete with a Verizon. We can compete with a Sprint. We can compete with a T-Mobile. Isn't that a good thing? I mean, don't we want to spark that competition? If they come back and say, look, if the FTC is going to come down and say this is anti-competitive and we can't do it, then we just don't invest. And isn't that a net loss for America?
I'm sorry.
I mean,
that was a great way using Verizon's pipes. Unless they're going to build their own pipes, I don't
know. I was going to say, because they're using Verizon, so doesn't that immediately offset some of that? I mean, I would agree with you if they were actually investing in their own infrastructure. I wouldn't necessarily agree that that was still, I wouldn't necessarily agree with the argument, but I would say that argument would be more valid. In this case, though, they're going to be using Verizon's infrastructure, right, which to me says that ultimately, you know, Verizon raises the prices for certain things, the MVNOs then have to raise the prices too. So I don't even know how much more competition you have.
I just looked up the numbers to your financial argument. And in the first quarter of this year, Comcast had $5.7 billion in cash provided by operating activities and free cash flow of $3.1 billion. So the argument that they can't afford this to me is specious.
Yeah. And the other argument here, and we'll hear it here as well as in the net neutrality debate, is the one they always trumped out is regulation kills investment, which is not held out by the numbers. Since the passage of net neutrality, we've seen a market spike in the amount of capital outlay for both spectrum and for deployment of fiber. So those numbers
are malleable.
Money is money.
Because the G is talking about specific numbers just for wireline investment over the last multi-year period since net neutrality. And there is some data that indicates there was a mild impact in the negative. But I mean,
I like how you preface some mild.
Right. Well, I mean, we're talking about economic data that is inherently politically weaponizable. And so I don't want to sound emphatic and clear cut when it's not. I mean, because the data you pick, the time frame you pick, and how you slice it is how you bend things to your own political narrative. And so that's what Ajit's doing. So I don't want to say he's wrong. I bet he's technically correct in some ways. But it's a deliberately, I would say, misshapen image of the broader investment landscape that you're outlining, which includes more than just one area of investment.
Right. Clearly, Comcast is not hurting.
No.
I paid for cable for like 3 years by accident and didn't have a TV. So I think they've got enough money from me.
How do you do that?
It was cheaper when I moved in to get cable with my internet, and then I didn't buy a TV and I didn't turn it off. So for that few $1,000s.
That's what happened with me. And
I'm still kind of mad about that.
Now, wait, Christina, you're going up to the Northwest. Yes. Who's your provider up there?
No idea. I might be stuck with Comcast, Suddenlink. I think it depends on what area we're in. I love my current provider, Optimum. I wish that Cablevision or Altice, whoever the French company that bought them is, I wish that they would were available where I'm going, because they're great. But I have no idea who my ISP is going to be.
I just got a notice at my place that our campus is now available for sonic.net, which makes me incredibly happy because they can get fiber. I'm going to get the 10 gig package.
I'm getting fiber at my house from Sonic. Oh, my goodness. I'm on Comcast, and I'm just like, every month, I'm just like.
Here's the fun part with Comcast. Comcast goes to, we basically own a block in the Sunset in San Francisco. Comcast goes to all four corners of that block and all the houses around that block But to come across the street, they want to charge us $150,000.
Wow.
So we're like, no, that's okay.
Well, just don't give 10K to the dev group 10, 15 times, and you'll have it right there. And you'll get so many miles in your PayPal account. Oh, my gosh.
Oh, my gosh. I'd be set for life. Oh, and by the way, just as a disclaimer, Sonic is a sponsor of the This Week in Tech Network. I don't know. I get it that this is the environment we're in. I mean, I don't think you would have heard an announcement like this last year because they figured that, yeah, they're going to be held accountable. But the fact that they're willing to do this openly and to make it sound like it's a wonderful thing for consumers, that's got me worried. That's actually the story for me above the fact that they just announced it. It's the fact that they think this is going to be okay.
You know what? This is cool.
Yeah.
Well, and the thing is that I think they have a good shot at convincing people, because if you look at what has already happened with a zero rating and how that has been kind of advertised as a good thing to consumers, and consumers are like, oh, well, look, I get unlimited data now. And look, I can get, you know, my YouTube videos don't count and this doesn't count. And look at all this value I'm getting. I mean, they're really selling zero rating as being a good thing for consumers, even though ultimately it has a lot of really scary implications that bigger picture people should consider. But that's not how it's being presented, and I don't think that's how regular people see it. So, yeah, I mean, if you use enough buzzwords and say competition enough times and we're going to lower your prices enough times, you know, people might still be weary, because I think most consumers don't trust their service providers to lower prices. But they might just see on the surface, oh, well, this is a good thing. You know, I could see that they could make that convincing argument just because it's already worked with zero rating.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and Comcast is a really popular company with consumers. You know, it's got a great customer service reputation, very fair pricing, quick service. You know, I mean, they are really at the absolute, they're actually better than Apple on the Net Promoter Score of American consumers.
They are.
Let's be fair here. Absolutely, I'm with you. They have a horrible customer support reputation, deservedly so.
Very.
If you ever get caught up in admin hell with Comcast, like, for example, they say you haven't returned a piece of equipment even though you know what you have, that can go on for months and months and months. And there's so
try
many
years.
People. 3 years, right?
No, seriously. When I moved from Atlanta to New York, they still think that I have a cable box that I do not have. And it took me, I'm not even joking, like 2.5 years to get it off of my credit report. It was a nightmare.
Dude, you got to get to Twitter, man. Just line them up on Twitter. You're verified.
That's
just cause mayhem and win. I mean, I know it's like it's in a privilege we get to abuse, but like whenever I need stuff fixed,
it's like their strategy is, well, we're Comcast. You're going to get tired before we do. And that's not a great, but on the other side, if you've ever been in a place where all you have is AT&T DSL, you dream of having Comcast. As bad as it is, you dream of having cable.
I had AT&T DSL, and their customer service was actually worse than Comcast. They hung up on me, like, multiple times. I'm like, I reset everything. Yeah, I know. Yeah. Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
No, you don't. No, it's right now I'm doing 46K download. No, I've been on a click.
It's like, yeah, no, I actually dialed up in order to get faster service. So maybe you could come out and fix this.
How fast was it supposed to be? What was the actual?
It doesn't matter.
AT&T DSL. How fast is it supposed to be?
Yes.
Not even AT&T knows, really.
Yeah. It was really, really bad.
Faster than satellite is all they can promise.
Exactly. Yeah.
That is depressing.
Faster than someone running across town with the web page printed out. That's what they're.
They promise. That's actually their service level agreement.
My mom threatened to print out an email this week, and I had to talk her out of it. I was like, "What decade is it?" Yeah. Sorry, it's off topic.
No, there's nothing off topic when you're talking about Comcast, really. It never
gets old to me. You know, it never fails to make everyone laugh because everyone's had an experience or a phone call with them that was just
everyone knows.
We've all had it.
Everyone knows.
Yeah.
Have you heard their new commercial campaign? And it's like the caring mother type thing. It's, we know that you have a busy life, which is why we think Comcast should work around your schedule than you working around Comcast. I'm thinking, when have you ever done that? Ever?
Also, you just got there?
Yeah.
Revolution.
A few years back, we had a Comcast rep who wanted to be on This Week in Enterprise Tech. And I had worked with this person before. I really didn't want him on the show. But I was trying to be nice, trying to build up a relationship. But their PR people just got really aggressive. And so at one point I said, okay, fine. Come on Friday, XX date at this time, da-da-da-da. And they said, okay, when can we expect you to connect? I said, well, sometime between noon and six. And it took them a sec, and they're like, oh. I'm like, yeah. You just wait. We'll be right there.
Did you actually keep it that way?
No, they've never called back.
Yay.
Which I'm okay with. So, yay. Sorry about that. All right, we're going to be back in just a second. We have one more big story I do want to cover because something interesting happened last week, and that was that hackers of an election got owned by the French. Vive la France. But first, let's go ahead and take a moment to thank another sponsor of This Week in Tech. Now, we've been talking a lot here about things that we've read, things that we've learned, things that we've consumed from other media outlets, because let's face it, information in this day and age just isn't something that's good for you to know. It's something you need to participate in society. The question is, do you have the right app? Do you have the right service? Do you have the right process to make sure you can get all of your trusted news sources in one place? Well, if you use Texture, yes, you do. Now, this episode of This Week in Tech is brought to you by Texture. With everything changing in the tech space, there is so much to learn. You can read up on the latest projects from Zuckerberg to what Elon Musk is doing in his free time. Or maybe you can get the scoop on the new must-have drone from your favorite tech journalists and editors. You could download the Texture app and get access to hundreds of magazines like Wired and PC World. Texture has gone beyond just delivering the magazine itself. They've made it easy for you to find and enjoy the articles that you want to read, with daily recommendations, with exclusive interactive features, with videos and more. Texture is searchable. You can mark what you like, check out back issues, and view bonus video content all from the same app. And you can use Texture to access not just your favorite magazine, but the latest and greatest in investigative journalism, U.S. politics, domestic and international news. The Texture app is entirely digital, so it's environmentally friendly, and it's the best way to consume magazines and articles. Texture is normally $9.99 a month, and you get over 200 magazines. Why subscribe to just a few magazines when you could get them all of them on your favorite topics, on your smartphone, on your tablet, for less? Texture was selected as one of Apple's top 2016 iPad apps, and if you try it out, I know you're going to find out why. Right now, Texture is offering our audience a 14-day free trial when you go to texture.com/twit. That's texture.com/twit. That's 14 days to try Texture for free to see if it will be your source of definitive news. Again, when you go to texture.com/twit. And we thank Texture for their support of This Week in Tech. All right, let's back up a week because this story I absolutely love. Living in the security world, living in the network world, this is something I think is going to be the standard going forward. Now, we know that in France, there was a politically motivated attack, cyber attack, just like we've had in other countries. We had it here in the United States. It happened in Germany. It's ongoing in Germany, and it's ongoing in the UK. In the US elections, and what we've seen in Germany, is you've had exfiltrations of large amounts of information, which are then weaponized. They can be released along with false information to make it sound like a leak is much worse than it actually is. And it does sway elections. Let's be honest there. Now, the New York Times has a great article about how this all played. Michael S. Rogers, he's an admiral with the NSA. He testified in the Senate Armed Services Committee on Tuesday that his agency saw the attack unfolding. They were looking at traffic. They were looking at spikes. They were looking at what the intelligence was saying. And they said, look, someone is trying to undermine the French election. So he reached out to his French counterparts. And to his surprise, they basically said, no, we got this.
oh, baby, you're way too late on this.
Yeah, it's like, no, we're all over this.
But thanks.
Now, the French knew it because they were actually on guard for this. They assumed that they would be attacked. And when they started to receive what they called high-quality phishing attacks for their employees, they said, okay, it's on, game on. And now here's what I think was brilliant about their strategy. They had a war room meeting and they said, there is no way we're going to be able to secure every employee, every computer. It's just not possible. Something will leak. So how do we deal with it? And they said, well, how about this? What if we just assume that something's going to leak? And why don't we influence the leak? So what they did was they started working in a counteroffensive. They mixed in disinformation with the cash that would be stolen. For example, one of my favorites was they created documents that looked like smoking guns. They had a purchase, a series of emails that looked like a high-level staffer was purchasing bath salts and stimulants on the internet and paying for it in Bitcoin. And this is one of those things, like, if you were trying to hack the election, it's like, oh my gosh, he's high.
Right. I've got it.
I've got it.
I've got them.
And but on the surface, if you were just looking at if is the document real, did it come from the treasure trove, you would say yes. But if you dug further, you would find out in the Bitcoin ledger there is no such transaction. And that's the kind of information that they sowed into the trove.
Are you saying that when WikiLeaks gets a big old dump of data from Russian sources, they don't actually go through it with a fine-tooth comb to verify it? I am shocked.
What?
I know.
Wait, one dude locked in an embassy by himself with little staff isn't actually doing a whole bunch of really, really minuscule legwork digitally? Hush.
Oh, that was the other part. I mean, because WikiLeaks, they
He's
came out.
He's busy with the cat.
Yeah, he has the cat, right?
He has a cat.
Yeah, he has a cat.
Oh, none of those jokes are, okay.
But WikiLeaks, they did tweet out when this was starting to surface that this is what happened. And they said, I very much doubt that the French authorities have the ability to vet information faster than we do. And the French were like, no, that's because we pre-vetted everything.
Yeah.
Right. Come on,
genius. We know what's fake.
I love WikiLeaks trying to be all like nerd powerful, like, oh, they can't read faster than we can. And they're like, oh, man, six weeks ago, you are still dumb.
So there's one of you and a country.
Well, France is like as big as Kentucky, right?
So you still know. Bigger than the room of an embassy and a cat.
But cat. You know, this opens up a new thing that this has been de facto standard for many organizations around the world. This is actually being pointed out in our chat room right now. In fact, my organization uses this all the time.
Wait, the school, your family, or the
Catholic
Jesuits?
Church?
Yes.
Oh, yes.
Yes.
I have
free birth dates, just FYI. But this is something that you use because you know there's going to be a leak. At some point, data is going to get out. And if you can throw even a little bit of doubt into that data and have a way to verify that the data was wrong, then it's very difficult to actually affect me with something that you've stolen.
Wasn't there also a media blackout for 2 days before the election?
Which is normal. That's normal.
Okay.
There's no campaigning. You don't campaign right before
the election. But this was timed to come out the Friday before, so that way they wouldn't be able to respond to it, and it still didn't have the impact they were looking for.
Precisely. Okay. So the way it works is they're not allowed to campaign. The officials are not allowed to campaign, but you can still have news, and this was supposed to be a news article.
Misinformation.
Yeah, I don't have my birthday. No.
I think I took mine off of Facebook and Twitter at last because
sometimes people like want to tweet me on my birthday, and so I had to go in and create fake birthdays so it would populate their calendars, because I realized I had taken my birthday off and I had changed it and then removed it from Facebook, but people still had it in their calendar, so they were tweeting at me on my birthday. So I would respond to them like, "Please delete your tweet, please." I've changed the birthday. I've made it public. Waited till it populated their calendars, and I changed it again.
Huh.
So now they're like two or three birthdays behind.
I always put disinformation on my social media. I mean, that's just sort of.
I'm not even really a tech journalist.
That would explain a lot. Actually,
it does. It does explain a lot.
Yeah. I'm actually not a priest.
Yeah.
Well, that's just a letdown.
I'm a plant.
I only have so many friends who are priests. The number is two.
Okay,
so.
There you go. But, I mean, is this going to be the standard from going forward? Anyone, I'm not just talking about political campaigns, but will there be chief disinformation officers who look for strategic ways to seed this in a way that doesn't affect corporate operations, but anyone who obtains the data won't know how to interpret it?
Oh, there has to be. Yeah. I mean, Apple's been doing this forever with leaks.
That's true. That's true.
I mean, they've been doing it. I mean, if you aren't taken from Apple's playbook.
Well, Apple takes it a step further. They'll leak seven different things so they can figure out where the
leaks that's how they get rid of people.
Where it came from and figure out who to
Sounds like a great workplace environment.
We shouldn't.
Right?
Don't leak your stuff.
I mean, I have no secrets to leak, sadly, but it sounds like if that's your culture, that you're deliberately trying to suss out leakers via disinformation intra your staff. I mean, ugh.
Yeah.
That's what happens. But a lot of money.
It was interesting how the narrative on this changed so much in 72 hours that it was really running.
Mm-hmm.
Because at first there was a leak and everyone's like, oh, this is going to lose them the election. And then very quickly it didn't come from the campaign. It was coming from people who were looking at the treasure trove saying, there's something not right here.
Mm-hmm.
This data is, and the one that they found quickly was the Bitcoin one. They said, this should be a smoking gun. It's not. What's going on?
And then that puts questions on any of the information, because even if it's accurate or not, it doesn't matter. You now have that level of distrust because the Bitcoin address didn't come out. This information is not accurate. So how can we know that the rest of this information is valid?
And they took a playbook straight out of the hackers playbook, because this is what they had been using. They had taken some true information, mm-hmm. put in their own false information to seem worse. The French did the opposite. They said, okay, fine, we're going to let you get some of that true information, but we're going to seed in false information so everyone will assume any information you have is tainted. Mm-hmm.
But critically, Le Pen only got 39% of the vote.
So it was a landslide.
The result is that even though they tried their best to influence the election by doing this horrible thing, they not only lost operationally, they lost in terms of results. So they could have actually defeated this operationally through the methods you've described and still actually had the election tilted in their favor. It didn't work.
But so how much of that is the French? That's a French societal thing. I mean, that's very French.
I feel like French jokes will get us in trouble with someone. But I mean, my point is they lost twice. And so that's what I like about this story. The election result didn't go the way they wanted it to, and they were owned before they even knew it. And so that makes me very happy. If we lose to this consistently, democracy is undermined globally, which I think would not be very good. So I'm glad we have some tools here to fight back. And if we cannot apply these systemically across all the elections moving forward, and hopefully even new and better tools, this does not seem that complicated. Shame on us.
If you're a parent and you have a child, teach that child OPSEC or InfoSec and put them in that industry. Make them, because there's not enough people on the good side taking care, like helping companies, helping everyone
being
figure
on
this
the good
out.
Side will earn you, don't you get paid. A five-figure salary, and being on the dark side can earn you a seven-figure salary.
Oh, no. Yeah. Being on the right side will get you at least six. I mean, like, good security people are very valuable. They're probably worth about as much as self-driving car tech guys right now.
Some of the stuff they have on sale at DEF CON that I've gotten, I can't afford that.
This is going to be, this is the first time in almost 20 years that I'm going to miss DEF CON.
You're not going to go?
I can't. I'm in silence during that time. I have a 2-month thing I have to do. It's a priest thing. And I
do you not go get to talk for 2 months?
I'm off. I will not be on the internet. I have no laptops, no desktops, no phones for 2 months.
What do you do?
Wow.
So I've heard about this thing. The priests used to do it back in the day.
I got it. Wait. Pray.
Yeah.
Yes.
Gonna do that.
There's an MC Hammer song about it.
Meditate.
What if like a month in you're like, I don't know, I can't do it.
Because you've done it before.
I've already done it.
Oh, okay.
So I mean, it's not new for me.
The idea of like a weekend retreat with yoga sounds terrifying to me. Because that's like two whole days of no laptops. Like, come on now.
Hot yoga with a bunch of priests.
I don't hang out with, I told you I have two priest friends, so I can't even get both in the room at the same time. But I mean, 2 months, does everyone do this in your order?
Oh, yes.
Okay. Still that's impressive.
Bummed you're going to miss DEF CON. 25.
I'm really bummed I'm going to miss DEF CON. I'm good friends with Lost, who makes badges.
Yeah, I interviewed him last year. Really nice.
And so he asked me, because he heard I wasn't going to be able to make the show. He goes, hey, do you want me to just send you a badge? I'm like, yes.
That's nice.
He offered to send me an Uber. I'm like, that's not right. No, you have to earn an Uber. But you've been to DEF CON, right, Christina?
I have.
So the Uber is I'm a geek. I solve one of the major challenges. I'm like, no, you have to earn that. That's not, if you walk into the show with an Uber and you can't tell them what you want it for, that's you should leave.
I always start looking at the crypto stuff and then I get like 5 minutes in them all.
Yeah.
I don't need that badge. I'm not.
Well, I love the Hardware Hacking Village. It's a place where you can sit and just be with like-minded people and geek out and solder stuff.
Yeah, it's pretty great.
You've never been to DEF CON?
It's the best.
You know, awesome. I don't cover security, so
you don't have to. No, just
you don't have to. Just go. It's so fun.
Audience, have any of you ever been to DEF CON? No? Okay, you should all go to... There is no place more romantic, more relaxing than Las Vegas in August.
Yeah.
That is
with a bunch of hackers.
That sounds so awful.
With a burner computer and a burner phone is the greatest.
Bring no
place.
Electronics.
Bring nothing with your actual
IDs on it. Yeah, bring burner stuff for sure.
Do they change casino technology?
No, they do not, which is hilarious.
I presume it's got to be breakable, right? I mean, like, they've got millions of dollars flowing through those gambling floors, and they've got the world's most nefarious / hilarious / lulzy hackers bouncing around. That just sounds like a recipe for, like, losses.
Oh, yeah, they've gotten better at it recently. But, like, last year, they found someone did a scan of the area around where we held DEF CON. And before the show, a week before the show, there were seven cellular repeaters. During the show, there were 40.
Mm-hmm. Someone
and
got arrested.
Like, man in the middle attacks. Woohoo! A while back, one of my first DEF CONs, there was a notice in the employee lounge for the Skyline where it was being held, and it asked.
Wait, the Aria.
Oh,
did you mean the Aria? Come back.
It wasn't just
Resurrect.
Me.
Oh, did you mean the Aria?
No, no. It was the Alexis Park. Sorry.
That's a lot closer.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
I can forgive that.
But there was a notice asking employees to watch out for ATM machines that they hadn't seen previously. Because that was the thing. People would just set up ATM machines. You'd put your card in.
And it would scan. Say, yeah.
They put skimmers on them. Like, you don't use an ATM machine anywhere. Or if you do, like, yanking on it, hitting it. I'm like, nah, I don't need cash.
You just not you sound all like do that, fun right? to
no,
me.
No, really I do it with every it ATM. Really every ATM machine, unless it's like at Bank of America, I yank on it.
Yeah, you I'm always like, check. Punk. You yank on the little card reader, right?
Yeah.
Christina?
Oh, yes.
Always.
Yeah, because I've been skimmed in my neighborhood in Brooklyn because of mistakes. So, yes.
And I always put my wallet over my fingers when I'm typing in case there's a camera trying to capture.
Yep.
You don't do this.
You need to go to DEF CON.
Seriously, no, that is not paranoia. You should do that. That's a good thing.
Well, I never take out cash because I live in 2017.
Wow.
Cash is still...
Do you ever use an ATM machine?
You can write me a check. It's cool. It's fine.
Do you use an ATM machine at all?
I don't. I mean, I quit drinking, so no.
Oh, okay.
I mean, like,
there
was the dive bar ATM. I became best friends with it, and then I broke up with it.
Oh, yeah,
and
that
now
it's like
just me
worst.
In my apartment drinking green juice.
That seems like the best place to put a skimmer is a dive bar ATM.
No, because no one's going to be like, oh, I'm going to check this at 4 a.m.
I mean, seriously, that's where I was skimmed in my neighborhood was, like, a dive bar.
See?
Yeah.
And I knew it. As soon as it happened, I was like,
oh.
I knew it. It was one of those things I was like, words I can't say on this show. I was like, I was so angry, and I was like, all right, gotta call the bank.
Yeah,
this has happened.
Your Amazon voice assistant, you just kept yelling
it
over and over again.
I want to find one of those because I want to take it. I really do. I want one of those.
Just take it home.
There's a whole meme on Reddit about this. People are like, they show a picture of one they found, and then someone will resubmit a picture of like an ATM just like destroyed. Like, I found one, guys. I love how that meme is popping up. But I mean, how often do you actually see them? I mean, like, you've been skimmed once, but I mean,
if you go to DEF CON, there will absolutely be at least one
outside of Nerdapalooza. Yeah.
Well, I've never found one. I've never found one, but I did teach my Jesuit brothers when I was living in St. Louis to just tug on the little thing really quickly, and one of my brothers did find one.
Okay, all right.
I got skimmed at a gas station in Texas. Outside of the
ATM
airport.
Or just like the payment machine?
Just the payment machine.
Really?
Because it was my work card I did it and it like moved and I'm like, I'm going to miss my plane. But you couldn't pull it off. It was like, I'm like, and then like a week later they're like, did you charge $46 at the Piggly Wiggly? And then all of a sudden it was like $400 at Walmart.
Your AOL card?
Yeah, it was my AOL card.
So the way those old cards used to work was if you spent more than $75 on one transaction, you'd have a receipt. So that's probably why they started catching those. Yeah.
Something I like about having an American Express card that's also tied to my frequent flyer account, they know where I'll be at any time. I don't have to tell them I'm going out of the country. They have that information. So, for example, I got a pop-up when I was in Tokyo that someone had my card and was trying to buy something in California, and I was able to immediately hit on the app, like in real time.
Your life sounds cool.
Yeah, I have it on Bank of America. Bank of America hits me up whenever something weird happens. They hit me up like right away.
Tokyo.
I have three
St.
jobs.
Louis.
I have like
I three St. jobs. Louis isn't very cool.
St. But, Louis can be fun. St. Well. Louis has a zoo.
That was the best self.
They have the arch. They have the arch. They have a botanical garden. Good music. Once a year, they have balloons.
Ooh,
man, this is just riveting stuff. No other city has balloons.
No, I mean hot balloons, like hot air balloons. There's like a little race.
Woo!
Oh gosh. Okay. No, I'm also not so big on St. Louis. So
that's my parents are from Kansas City, so I get to hit on it.
Casey K, Casey Mo,
Casey Mo.
Oh.
Well, I think what we were all trying to say with this discussion is that if you're going to hack an election, make sure you don't use a compromised ATM.
Correct.
Again, that's the second time we've gone off the rails, and I don't know how
you,
we got
you
there.
Have to corral us. You got to corral us away from this because we'll do this
DEF CON
every single time.
DEF CON is coming up.
DEF CON is coming up. So good,
there
though.
You go.
Yes.
And neither. And I'm assuming Christina's not going. None of you are going. It's just going to be me. I'm fine.
I'll go with you if you want to.
Yeah, no, I'm not going. Yeah,
I'll just go and gamble.
You're
going
to be in the area. The West Coast is all one big place. You should
be closer.
I'll be closer. Well, when in August is it?
No, it's July this year.
They pushed
the
it
last
up.
Weekend, I think, of July.
Never mind, because I am going to be in Vegas in August, but that's for Britney Spears.
So
she's doing that residency show, right?
Yeah.
27th to the 30th.
It's coming to an end. It's coming to an end. And so.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to Metallica does that in like 15 years. And I'll just go see Metallica for a week in their Vegas residency. It'll be amazing.
If you go to if you do go to DEF CON, make sure to check out Dual Core, who will be, he always performs. He does nerdcore rap. It's actually a lot cooler than
I'm
I just
I'm a fan of Nerdcore. It's okay.
It's Nerdcore. No, he's good. Really good. He's really, really good.
Dual Core?
He's called Dual Core. The group's called Dual Core. We call him 80, as in Interrupt 80.
I'm pulling up Spotify right now so I can write this down.
Okay.
Is it Dual Core one word or Dual Core two words?
Dual, capital C Core, Dual Core. And the song you want to listen to is Hack All the Things.
That's a little on the nose.
It is, right?
Is this year's badge going to be analog or digital?
This should be analog. This is analog. Last year was digital.
Because last year was digital. Because I talked to him last year, and he's like, well, I kind of want to talk to him to do something digital because it's the 25th year, but at the same time, you know.
Well, the last analog Uber, he used irradiated glass, which was phenomenal because it's so difficult to fake that.
Mm-hmm. For everyone who's listening, like I was a minute ago, and think you're talking about the company Uber, what is Uber, and why does it matter, right, and why do we care, and how do you earn them, and why are they blah?
If you go to DEF CON, you will see people walking around with different kinds of badges, and typically they're black or have some element of black into them. They're called the Uber badges. An Uber badge goes to someone super elite, and it's typically because you've won a competition, you solved the contest, like captured the flag, or the badge hack, or the crypto challenge. And with an Uber badge, you get lifetime admittance to DEF CON for free.
Oh, that's super. Oh, yeah. Those are really cool.
But it's more than admittance. If you have an Uber badge, people know that you're damn good at what you do.
So that's the right word.
Can we say that on the show?
Yeah, damn. Yeah.
What? I was so lied to 2 years ago.
That's the Uber badge.
Okay, so if you haven't seen these, go ahead and look them up because they actually are really ornate and pretty cool. And I would love to have one of these.
The eyeballs pop out on that, by the way.
Oh, really? Yeah. That's okay. Yeah. This hits all of my nerd
zones.
It took
Lost so long to assemble those. Now that we're speaking about things that no one can see, even if they're watching the video version, there we go. See, it's radioactive.
That is super cool. And then Uber's name was then ruined by Travis. Yeah. Oh, well.
Well, folks, I'm getting a sign from the producer who's saying that we're running out of time. Is there any story we haven't covered that we really should at least talk a little bit about?
Snapchat got whacked.
We expected that, though, right?
Yeah. That's what I worked on most this week.
Yeah. And that actually affects me because one of our sister schools, St. Francis, they're the ones who had that amazing IPO bonus. They invested $15,000 and got $25 million. Immediately I told them, sell.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And they didn't.
Well, it opened at 24, shot to 29.44, and now it's at 18. Whoops.
And that's still overpriced.
Yes. I was very proud of my headline during the earnings call. I will say this. It was like a Snapchat debut's disappearing stock price.
Oh, that was a good. I remember seeing that. Well,
10 points.
Was that your last article?
But Christina, you don't get to do that anymore because you're not a journalist.
No, I'm not. No, my last article was predictably about rose gold, and that is not a joke.
Rose gold.
Yeah, I wrote a blog about my love for rose gold.
Oh, okay.
I love
as blocking. In the finish?
As in the finish, as in the color. And I said it's the best thing that's ever happened in tech, and I will hear no arguments. That was my final blog.
Does fashion conform to Moore's law? I'm not sure.
Sometimes. It varies.
Do they make out rose gold zunes?
I have a chocolate zune. Do not make fun of the zune.
I had a halo zune.
I bought the black zune and it came
stolen.
Out. Great device. I miss zune.
All right. Well, I think that means that we're going to be running to the end here. I do want to give my guests here a chance to talk a little bit about their projects because, well, this has been a fun show. I haven't done this in 3 years, and I probably won't do it for another 3 years, but I'm glad I did it with you. Alex, what are you doing that people should know about?
Yeah, I'm the editor-in-chief of Crunchbase News. It's a new media org we're building over at Crunchbase, which is a data company. If you want to read some really nerdy financial stuff, you can go to crunchbase.news in your browser and say hi.
And we see you quite a few times on the new screensavers. I think you've done that show, what, 4 times, 3 times?
Yeah. They keep bringing me on because I'm youthful, I think. That's how that works out.
Well, you're a millennial. So
That's true. Yeah, I presume they kind of trot me out to attract a younger audience. I don't know. I love coming up here. I just wish this was in SF for our sake. All three of us are going back to the city. But it's great to be up here.
But it's reverse traffic, so it's kind of okay a little.
Robbie has to drive. I just sit there and complain.
That's true. He doesn't drive the entire time.
No, I drive. I just don't drive in SF.
Well, Christina doesn't drive either.
I mean, I have my license. I drove recently in New Orleans.
Millennials.
Are you going to get your license?
I don't know. I don't. I'm I mean, I don't know. It's been a really long time since I've driven, and I'm not very good at it.
Take a lesson.
Did you ever have a license?
Yes, I did.
Okay,
but it's been a really long time.
And you just let it expire?
I just let it expire. It was best for everyone that I not drive. That was even before I moved to New York. And then in New York, it was absolutely best for everyone that I not even attempt. And so we'll see. I mean, public transit, I understand, depending on where we live, it could be pretty good. Depending on where we live, I might be able to have, you know, buses take me to the office. I don't know. I'm still figuring it out. I'm very afraid that in 6 months' time, I might actually have a car. And then I will be really terrified for everyone on the road with me.
Well, you're going to be in Seattle, so the only two cars that are acceptable are either a Prius or a Tesla.
A what?
Yeah.
A Prius, sorry. I used the Top Gear pronunciation for a second there.
Oh, that's okay. That's a pretty good slip up. I like that.
Prius, yes.
The Prius.
Christina, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I was saying I've heard from friends that if I get a Prius, they will disown me. But you're right. That's definitely the more affordable option. So we will see. I don't know.
I like them. I don't buy them.
I like them too.
These are hybrid. They're geeky. I like geeky cars. No.
Robbie, what's your day job?
No,
because it's topical.
Oh, my day job? I write about cars and motorcycles and transportation. And I just take a lesson. You'll be fine. Just take a lesson. Don't let anyone and don't let your friends or your family members teach you how to drive, because that always seems to end in tears. That's what I hear a lot.
So you're saying I shouldn't let my husband
drive? You're better off letting a third party just like give you a nice refresher course if you're that concerned. And then once you have your license, you don't have to get a car. They have Car to Go up there. They have BMW Reach now. They have a lot of really great services where you just drive a car from point A to point B and you just leave the car. You just walk away from it, which is kind of nice.
Well, as long as we're talking about you, do you want to do your plug? Let's talk about all your outlets. Let's talk about all your work, especially talk about your work with automotive technology, because there's a few of us here at Twit who love that stuff.
So I write about transportation for Engadget. I write a little bit about InfoSec. The transportation stuff's great because I get to drive cars, driven Teslas. And right now I'm testing the Zero Motorcycle, their electric bike, the 6.5 kilowatt hour bike.
Ooh.
So it's an electric bike. If you've ever ridden an electric motorcycle, it's outstanding because it's just torque all the time.
You could wheelie on that
bike. Yeah. So that's what I write about.
Ride around on electric vehicles in San Francisco?
Yeah, all the time. I drive.
In the financial district?
Yeah, ride around in cars. I get cars for like a week. I'll have these motorcycles for a few weeks. My daily rider is I have a 250 Vespa. I just use it to get around the city. And
why hasn't Nissan given you one of their Leafs yet? Because I know they've been wanting that to catch on in San Francisco.
I don't know. I think it's a little long in the tooth.
Yeah.
So at some point you're just reviewing something that's like a year old, a year and a half old, you reach out. Some automakers they kind of understand that tech sites are doing more car stuff, so they reach out a little bit. They're a little bit better at reaching out. Some of them not so much. I write about cars. Oh, I have a show coming up for my band.
Oh.
So that's a plug. Can I plug my band?
What do you play?
I sing.
Oh, you sing. You're the front man.
He's very good, too.
According to Alex, I'm very good.
Where are you playing?
We are playing at the Rickshaw Stop on May 27th. We're doing a 90s show. So if you like Nirvana and Pearl Jam, all the Gen X stuff. So you're going to be there.
Oh, okay. I'll be there.
We're doing US versus UK. We have our friends who are in a Britpop band. They're doing, they're doing Oasis, Blur, Pulp. We're doing,
Hole. Definitely a hole.
Yeah, probably. We're doing all the U.S. bands. It's going to be fun. I'm doing Beastie Boys.
If you're doing Beastie Boys, I have to show
doing
up.
Beastie. We're doing. Yeah, we had to do a last minute change.
Old Beastie Boys or newer Beastie Boys?
We're doing Sabotage. There you go. Okay. I'll just say it. We're doing Sabotage. Everyone. Everyone loves that song.
Amazing.
We're doing Rage Against the Machine. We're doing President of the United States of America.
Oh, that's why all that was on the playlist.
Are you doing Peaches?
Yeah. So the playlist, because I have to learn all the songs. Hey, look, there it is right there. There you go.
All we played on the way up here in the car.
Get your tickets today, folks. It's only, $10 to $12?
$10 in advance, $12 at the door. It's cheap. like compared to like any other thing you're going to do in San Francisco. It's cheaper than a burrito at this point.
I don't think I've ever been to the rickshaw stop. So that's reason enough for me to go.
It's such an amazing place. They really care about sound, which is for someone who's in bands, like that's important. But it's a really nice room. It's big. They have a bar. They have a mezzanine so you can sit upstairs if you don't want to like
Is this
dance.
Where I saw your Talking Head show?
Yeah.
It's a great venue. And go upstairs if you can.
Go upstairs. It's super chill. It's nice. Bands. And I write about cars. Sure. Why not?
Roberto Baldwin. He is a tech man and a man of the arts. Thank you very much. It's been a pleasure to meet you both in person and to have you here for my little hosting party.
I hope you still like us.
Of course.
Okay.
Yeah. And, of course, Christina. Now, you're not a tech journalist anymore. And I think that should be in your Twitter handle now. Christina, not a tech journalist anymore, Warren. I know you can't tell us too much about what you're doing at Microsoft other than what you teased, but is there anything else you want us to know about what you're doing, what you're going to be up to, other than a one-week fun employment? What did you call it?
Yeah, 1 week fun employment / moving. I mean, like, honestly,
it's
like
really
it's not really fun. It's really all about like packing up my life and us moving across the country. But I would like to plug though, in addition to what I will be doing at Microsoft, and I'll have more to share on that once I learn more about it. But I'll be producing content aimed at developers across different levels for Microsoft Virtual Academy. So that'll be fun. And obviously, if you guys have suggestions for courses and things you'd like to see, let me know, because definitely want to engage with the community and create stuff that will be informative. But I also do a podcast called Rocket on Relay FM, relay.fm/rocket, that I do with Brianna Wu and Simone de Rochefort. And that's a lot of fun. And I'm going to be able to continue doing that. So I will still be podcasting. So even though, I will still be tweeting, especially about The Bachelor. The Bachelor comes back on May 22nd.
Oh,
you are literally my feed on those nights.
Yeah, I've never seen those shows through you. I've never seen those shows, but I know what's going on.
I only watch two shows on TV. One is Game of Thrones, and the other is
show.
The Expanse.
Oh, The Expanse is
a great show. The Expanse is so good. Yeah. But no, The Bachelor comes back, and that means that I will be tweeting from a different time zone, which is bizarre, because I will now be spoiled. Like East Coast Twitter is going to ruin The Bachelor for me the same way I've been ruining it for people for the last however many years. So it is my comeuppance, and I'm excited.
Can you get an East Coast feed somehow?
And you know what? I might be able to. I will see. I think with the VPN and some of the services that I subscribe to, I might be able to.
And of course, Christina, we already have a person on the Microsoft campus in Redmond who does have a weekly show on the Twit TV network, Lou Maresca. And I have no idea where you'll be in relation to him, but at some point, the two of you will probably bump into each other, because there's only, what, a few thousand, tens of thousands?
Only like 60,000 of us. Yeah. No, I would love that. I would love to meet Lou. I'm trying to meet as many people as I can. We are kind of going to Seattle. We're kind of like, I have some friends there, but it's not the same sort of situation. So if anybody in Seattle, hit me up. I'm Filmgirl at Twitter. I'd love to like have coffee, get to know any of you. I need friends. Yay.
Yeah. Oh.
Become friends to Frank Shaw.
Become friends.
Christina Warren, thank you very much. Now, I want to do something right now, and it's not because I've completely forgot to do it until now. It's because I wanted to do these back to back. But in case you haven't been watching Twit, here's what you missed.
Previously on Twit.
Sophie has to come back.
Yes.
And we have tips and tricks.
And tricks.
Oh, she's so adorable.
Walk. There you go.
Oh, that was great. Yay. Oh, man. I want a dog so bad.
Triangulation.
Daniel Suarez is here. It feels like every couple of years I'm going to get you back with a new book. This new one, Change Agent, which just came out, is the first one that is in the future. But this is a warning.
It
that
is
it
an
could
admonition.
Be.
Putting people on notice that Silicon Valley will decamp if it needs to. The brilliant minds there might go elsewhere.
Right,
so we have to treat science seriously. Yeah. We have to be evidence-based in our thinking. You don't get to the moon by going like this. Yeah. You do the math.
Windows Weekly.
Mary Jo Foley and Paul Theriot are here with some special guests from Microsoft Build Conference.
What you see in Story Remix, we've done deep machine learning on all sorts of sets of video and photos so that we can understand not just, oh, there's a person in here. Then we can take all that data, put it through our AI system, and tell the story for you if you don't have the time or the inclination to learn how to use a tool.
Twit. Tech just like you like it.
Poor Sophie wants out.
I tried to offer her out beforehand. I told her she was not going to enjoy it, but she would not go.
Forewarning, Sophie, we're starting a podcast. You might be a little bored. Is that okay?
It lasts forever.
So that's what you've missed, and we've got Jason Howell with the week ahead.
Here's a look at just a few of the stories we'll be watching in the week ahead. On Tuesday, May 16th, HTC is holding an event teased as Squeeze for the Brilliant.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently, that refers to the rumored HTC U11 that is expected to include a feature called Edge Sense that puts touch sensors into the frame of the phone that allows users to squeeze and swipe the sides of the phone for different interactivity elements. Trying something new. On Wednesday, May 17th, Google I.O. kicks off at the Shoreline Amphitheater in Mountain View, California. Google is expected to dish out new features to Android O, Google Play updates, and of course, developers in attendance get to fill their minds with all things googly. I'll be there, so I'm sure I'll have some insight to share from the event throughout the week. On Thursday, May 18th, the FCC will put up a vote on restoring internet freedom in a move that signals FCC Chairman Ajit Pai's determination to move net neutrality rules out of FCC's jurisdiction. That's a look at a few of the things we'll be tracking in the coming week. Join Megan Maroney and me on Tech News Today every weekday at 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern, here on twit.tv.
Thanks, Jason. I appreciate that. And folks, don't forget that you can find us here every Sunday starting at 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific time. Not like Leo, I can't just rattle off UTC, but just work backwards and forwards from there. Again, thanks to our panel, Christina, Roberto, and the man whose name is too close to the Amazon voice assistant to say on the live stream. Thank you very much for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you for coming up. It's not easy coming up to Petaluma from San Francisco as we get closer to the summer, because then we get all the summer traffic.
It's okay.
It wasn't that bad.
Also, you have so much more space to get up here. If you did this studio in SF, it'd be like the size of my apartment. We'd all be on the same chair. You know, it'd be pretty bad.
Sitting on chairs, laps.
Yeah, indeed.
That's not awkward at all.
Also, thanks to Carson Bondi, our super producer, to Lisa and Leo, who actually let me do this. Hopefully, they're coming back from Colorado in the near future because, Leo, we miss you. We need you back. Anything else? Do we want to have any shout-outs? Especially to our audience.
Yeah.
We actually have an in-studio audience, and they braved what happens in Petaluma to come and watch the unfolding of tech news.
What happens in Petaluma?
We have chickens.
To quote the song, it goes down in the DM, I think. I don't know.
Yeah,
Petaluma.
We really do have chickens. We have the chicken and egg parade.
I feel like I need to get out of here.
Wait, Jemmer B, don't we have American Graffiti Days or Graffiti Days coming up? Like classic cars. They reenact that scene from American Graffiti where they pull the back axle out of a police car. It's kind of fun, actually.
Oh, I like
Alex Gumpel told me about that.
You should come up.
Yeah.
I'll have the motorcycle.
Wow.
That predates me a little bit.
Well, obviously, I've got some skeptics here. And with that, another twit
is amazing.
Is in the can.